This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki kicking off your Friday. Cold one, minus 19 right now. Bundle up. Thank you for joining us. It is a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day, as the Winnipeg Jets will host the St. Louis Blues at 7 o'clock. Puck drop with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns at 7 p.m. H&L live from Boston Pizza City Place at 3 o'clock. 6 o'clock, Rick Ralphson with the Manitoba Building Trades Winnipeg Jets pregame show. And here on Windows, Winnipeg Jets postgame show with Ralph and crew will wrap it all up for you. It is a full coverage of the second game of a six-game homestand for the Winnipeg Jets as they host the St. Louis Blues, whom they trail for the no. They trail by 5 points, and that's because the LA Kings got an overtime win last night over the Toronto Maple Leafs to move into the second wildcard spot with 68 points. The Jets have 62 points. They trail the Blues by 5. They trail the LA Kings, who have now played the same amount of games as the Jets at 64, by 6 points. Is this a must-win game, gentlemen?
It's really hard to look at it, basically, I think, all the way home, but when you're talking about playing one of the teams in front of you, and you know, we talked about having to leapfrog the Kings yesterday. Well, now it's the Blues you have to leapfrog to be able to catch the Kings. You've got a massive mountain to climb here. You'd need all kinds of good luck to come into play, because not only does one team need to falter, but you need two teams needing to falter, two teams with remarkable playoff pedigree here over the last number of years. You need them to collapse, and you need to go and win, in your final 18 games, would you have to go 12-6 maybe? Maybe even more than that? Like, it's hard to imagine the streak that they'd have to put together. So does that all add up to tonight being a must-win? I think you have to say yes.
It is a must-win. There's no other way about it. You're 5 points back of the Blues. They have two games in hand on you. You lose this one, it's done. Like, it's just that simple. You lose it, you're done. Like, and even if you don't want to look at the Blues and just focus on the Kings and 6 points back, like, 6 points is that's just a mountain at this time of year. And, you know, me being a Flyers fan, they get a big win against Florida last night in the shootout. Mm-hmm. You have the Kings going to OT against Toronto, Islanders winning, other teams going to OT. The Flyers gain 1 point on everyone they're chasing. Like, that's kind of the problem that you're at this time of year, where you can win, and you're barely creeping up the standings. The Jets could go on a six-game win streak, and there's a decent chance they gained 2 points during that time. You know what I mean?
Look how they went, the 3-0-2 or whatever they did to secure points in 5 games consecutively, or maybe it was in 4 games consecutively, and all it did was allow them to tread water.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? They just kept their head above.
That's the crappy part of the NHL. And if I wasn't completely on board with Huss before, 1,000,000,000% now, where the three-point game has to be an absolute must, because it kills the third period in these tight games, and it just makes it impossible for teams realistically to get up the standings. So, I mean, the Jets, with that three-point game, I mean, they realistically have to go something like 14-4 just to have somewhat of a chance here. So it is beyond a must-win game, and it's not even that. You got to win this one in regulation, too.
It's interesting that comes up again, because there's, from everything we've heard and everything I've read and looked into, that's never, like, it's not even literally something that's going to come up at the Board of Governors. It's just never going to happen.
It's counterproductive to maintaining the parity. Even if it's propped up parity, that's what is so precious to the NHL. And I have to, looking at it from a league perspective, boys, I understand that perspective. Like, you want as many teams clumped up there.
Oh yeah,
you know, for the dream of the playoffs, selling tickets of 20 games. Look at us; we're part of the idiots, right? We're like, it's feeding right into us here. We're 6 points back of a playoff spot, and we still maintain hope. So this is affecting. You don't think down in Dallas they're saying the same thing, right? They're being eight points back, and they're drinking the Kool-Aid too. And look at Toronto, Florida, Philadelphia, Tampa, like all the way down, man. Like even New Jersey being down by eight. I guarantee you they're talking about, hey, 8 points. It's a huge, it's a long shot, but it's there, and it's all because of this propped up parity.
The other reason, because I'm not a big guy on must-win games, unless it literally is, if you don't win this game, you're eliminated. But I am tonight simply by the fact that Los Angeles and Calgary, who have the wild card spots, have played the same amount of games as Winnipeg now. It's 64 games. St. Louis has two in hand. If you lose this game or even give up a point, they still have two games in hand on you, and will be then 6 to 7 points ahead of you. So it just, the picture just keeps getting smaller and smaller. And I think when we started after Tuesday's game, there was a 3% chance the Jets make the playoffs. So if there wasn't a must-win game, and maybe if they weren't playing the team right ahead of them with two games in hand, I would even ease up on that. But to me, you cannot not get a proverbial clean win here tonight. You can't even go to overtime with St. Louis, because that point you're giving up to them is extremely detrimental. Yesterday at Winnipeg Jets practice, and this is the big show on TSN 1290. Jim Tilth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you here on a Friday. Nick Ehlers, Brian Little, and Blake Wheeler, Matthew Perreault, Mark Scheifele, and Patrick Laine. Sean Mathias, centered by Adam Lowry and Joel Armia. And then Marco Dano's are back. Looks to be in the lineup tonight. Andrew Kopp returns, looks to be in the lineup tonight. And Chris Thorburn, Nick Pétain was the forward that was out of the lineup yesterday. Not partaking in the line rushes was the extra forward.
And I guess I would suspect the thinking is the heavy thing against St. Louis on that fourth line specifically, like to have Kopp in the middle instead of Pétain. I, you know, just off the top of my head, boy, I'd rather see Kopp in the middle of that fourth line with Dano and Pétain in the middle of it with Kopp and Dano on the outside of him with Thorburn eating some popcorn tonight.
And I was going to ask, I think that's probably 80% of it. If there is anything else to this, how have you thought Patan's played the last couple of games? Before the break, this one. I believe he was second in ice time on the power play against Minnesota. He was top three anyway. It was Ehlers, Pétain, and Laine were the top three. Have you been happy with his play?
Well, I think he's played at a decent level. So, certainly, you know, there's no reason for me here to sit him outside of the heavy thing, which I think Paul Maurice, I understand the thought process of it. But even if there is a heavy situation or problem, or if you want to go out and you know, if he's on that fourth line, Dano and Kopp are going to bring that to that fourth line, like the banging around and the smacking around and all the rest of it. So maybe you want Thorburn in there for Reeves in case things get whatever the old school thought to it. But give me the production of Nick Pétain and what he does, and then on top of it, the way he complements your power play.
Yeah, let's join this century here. Like, what are we, this? It just makes no sense. There's no other way to put it. Great, the Jets could be heavy on the fourth line. They'll be heavy inside their own end. Like, I just don't. I don't get why you wouldn't want to have a fourth line full of speed and skill to go up against whoever St. Louis puts up out there. This is so illogical. It doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. I don't get it at all. And the weirdest part of this is, I'm sure Maurice will bring up, well, you know, the Blues are big and blah, blah, blah. This way we don't get crushed, blah, blah, blah. Chris Thorburn will play 4 minutes in the game. He'll play 4 minutes in the game. So they can be big and heavy for 4 minutes out there, while Nick Pétain averages somewhere between 9 and 10 minutes.
Well, doesn't that at least make a little bit of sense then? Like, if we know that's why he's doing it?
No, that makes I guess it's better than the alternative of thinking Thorburn brings more to the lineup than Nick Pétain does.
It's not that it makes sense.
Well,
it's
just, I
that's
think
his
that.
Justification, and whether or not you agree with it, you know, is that a positive in the game? Like, Nick Pétain had one of the best possession numbers in the most recent game, and I don't like it at all. I understand the old school thinking of it. But give me the production. You got Kopp and Dano that could keep it nice and heavy and grindy with all kinds of sandpaper for you there on the fourth line. I just don't see. And then plus you also lose out on your power play. I don't like.
And Patan's a good face-off guy. Like, he's been underrated at that this year. So it makes no. Like, Montreal doesn't. when Montreal plays a big team, they don't say, well, sorry, Gallagher, down to the fourth line or down to the press box, too small, we don't need. No, they put him out there because he's a good player, because he can play hockey well. That's what Nick Batan does. It makes no sense to me, right? You move Stafford to give some of these young guys time, and Chris Thorburn still ends up in the lineup. I don't get it at all. Makes no sense. No sense.
St. Louis comes in the 19th ranked team here in the National Hockey League as we set up today's Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day between the Blues and the Jets on TSN 1290. And, of course, the Winnipeg Jets are the 23rd team coming into this. Before we delve into this much deeper, and we will throughout today's show, and we'll take your calls on the game and some stuff. We didn't get to all the calls yesterday when we were discussing Kevin Cheveldayoff and the job of the trade deadline and just if he's happy with the team overall. So we'll open up the Boss Pizza fan line at 9 o'clock as well. And also get your more thoughts on that. We want everybody to have a time to get their opinions. But early thoughts on this. What do you expect from the Blues tonight? It's just been they fired their coach this year. They gave their goalie, Jake Allen, their starting goalie, a couple days off. What are you expecting from the Blues tonight at this point of the season? And they've traded their star defenseman, Kevin Shattenkirk.
Yeah, well, I expect us to see a pretty snarly and solid effort and team tonight. They're 6-4 their last 10 games. They haven't turned things around in the goal, but they have a little bit. Like, Jake Allen's recovered a little bit here from that perspective as far as the level of earlier season struggle. So I think you're going to see a playoff-honed team with a bunch of veterans still that can crank it up in times that are necessary like this. And I would not be, as typically we see with these two teams, who would be surprised here to see a one-goal, really tight battle. I expect the Jets to look good tonight. You know, don't be surprised if it's Jake Allen between the pipes. His February, he put together a bit of a masterpiece after a real tough number of earlier months, a .933 save percentage over 10 or 11 games during the month of February. So he seems to be back on track. He was greatly affected. Remember, I think he ripped off three shutouts, one goal against in the time soon after the coaching change, whatever that means. But I just expect to see a real tough sort of inspired St. Louis team here, and it's going to be huge up to the Jets to respond to that.
These two teams are almost mirror images of each other right now, where St. Louis has a real, real strong top six, so do the Jets. Solid four defensemen, so do the Blues. The Blues might be better off depth-wise on defense, but similar there as well, and they have a young goalie who's been up and down this year. So I just think these two teams match up extremely well. I don't expect anything less than a one goal game late here. I still like the Blues a lot, even with Shattenkirk gone. I kind of like the makeup of their team. I just don't know, this it kind of feels like a transition year for them. Like it doesn't have the same sort of oomph as Blues teams of years past. So but even having said that, I still expect this to be a real, real tight game.
I was going to ask you guys right now, looking at, you know, you go look at Cap Friendly or wherever, and go look at the Blues and look at the Jets, and which organization would you rather, do you think's in a better spot right now?
And we'll discuss that and many other things. Goaltending, Connor Hellebuck had a session before practice. And let's talk some defensive play for the Jets, because that is another big issue with the team again this season. But when we come back to the NFL on the Big Show on TSN 1290, Colin Kaepernick will stand, but he opts out of his contract, and we'll discuss that on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Your chance to qualify for TSN 1290's Ultimate Canadian Live Sports Tour coming up in the next hour, as we'll let you pick the place and the sporting event. Will get you there and put you up while you're there and get you tickets to the event. Coming up in the next hour, this is the Big Show. Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Much more to come on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day as the Jets host the Blues. But gentlemen, Adam Schefter reporting yesterday from ESPN that quarterback Colin Kaepernick will now stand during the national anthem next season. As some sources have told ESPN, Kaepernick no longer wants his method of protest to detract from the positive changes he believes he has created Sources told ESPN once again, he also said the amount of national discussion on social inequity, as well as support from other athletes nationwide, including NFL and NBA players, affirmed the message he was trying to deliver. He is also today expected to opt out of his contract with the San Francisco 49ers, thus meaning he will become an unrestricted free agent. Your thoughts on his decision, and I want to emphasize this, he didn't put this out there because there is already some people in the state saying, well, he's going to be a free agent, so he's doing this so another team would be willing to sign him without the controversy. Adam Schefter was reporting this when following up on the story that he is going to opt out of his contract. He told Adam that he wasn't sort of putting it out there, I'm going to opt out and then I'm going to stand. Your thoughts on the whole process that he initiated and now the fact that he's going to stand during the anthems?
I have massive respect for Colin Kaepernick and what he initiated. You look at what's going on right now with this societal almost revolution or whatever that is going on south of the 49th parallel that makes me so happy I'm Canadian pretty much every single hour of the day. And obviously there's some real serious problems going on down there and real serious, ugly, horrific racial relations, right, between black, white, brown, white. Like, it's just – it's brutal, horrible. And at this point in time, unless you're blind – or you don't care, there's all kinds of videos to watch where it's just there's a problem, massive problem. The melting pot, the great melting pot experiment seems to be a remarkable failure. And so what the stand that he took early on, and it upset some people. And interestingly enough, the veterans, a bunch of veterans stood behind him in it saying, hey, this isn't the America that I put my life on the line for. Or this isn't the America that my brother or dad or sister or mom maybe died for in serving the country. So I think it's important that I have not seen anyone of color take a real hard stand against Colin Kaepernick. That even the people standing hard against him and hating on him in a real vile way, there seems to be racial implications in that. So I don't know, you know, you can disagree. Even if you disagree with him kneeling during the anthem, you still have to respect what he did and how he affected the entire NFL. Players that would not say anything, would not take any sort of a stand, whether it was the Seahawks interlocking arms or other teams doing different things, right? We saw it affect all kinds of people. And you're also talking about a man who has donated over $1 million in just the last year, following up on his word and making positive impact on the community around him. If we all took the same sort of stand and carried out the same type of actions in the communities in which we live, the world would be a much better place. I have massive respect for Colin Kaepernick, and he damn well deserves to go and play somewhere upcoming this season. Had a real solid year last year, even with all the crap and how horrible they were as a team last year, to have basically a 60% completion percentage, 16 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, and a rating of 90.7, you know, better than Phillip Rivers, Carson Palmer, a bunch of Eli Manning last year. He had a real good year, and I look forward to seeing the level of success that he attains this year.
To be fair, I saw a game where he threw 5 passes total. So you're going to have better numbers that way.
But that's not necessarily on him, right?
I'm just saying, like, when you're talking those numbers better than Phillip Rivers and stuff, Phillip Rivers throws 10 times as many passes a game than he got to last year.
Yeah.
So does it affect him getting a job? That's what I'm asking. Like, the stand, you know, whether you agree with it or disagree with it, it now seems to be over. He's made his point. The number of dollars this raised for his causes because of his jersey sales, which he all donated and stuff, obviously, whether you disagree or not, do you take a chance on this guy?
I think, yes, because ultimately what drives decision-making in pro sport is, does this guy give us a chance to win? Colin Kaepernick, I think, can go to a number of organizations and give them a chance to win. You look, for instance, at just the nightmare in Cleveland where they have nobody. I mean, it's to go in, even if it was a backup role, or to go and try and battle away a starting job, the raw skills Colin Kaepernick still possessed when people were saying that he's got the potential to be one of the best quarterbacks out there.
Yeah, there's no talent-wise, there's no reason why you wouldn't sign him. Now, that does it always play the biggest role in some of these things? And it's funny,
especially
too.
Especially in the States.
It's funny, too, how a guy takes a political stance and that's seen almost more toxic than a guy with a criminal record.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's that to me is a real...
It shows
it's a real
how deep-seated the racial divide is down there, huh?
Yeah, and just how toxic the political environment is, too, right? Where, you know, he could have been caught for a DUI, nobody gets hurt, he has no problem getting a deal, but he protests against the anthem, and there's going to be a bunch of owners, even with them saying, I'm not standing anymore. You think they forget what happened last year? Like, there's going to be some owners automatically,
that's
don't
right
care, there. You're not coming in. You could be a starting caliber quarterback, no doubt about it. You're not coming into my organization. So I think I'll find a job somewhere just because quarterback is so needy for so many organizations. I just hope, you know, his decision to stand now doesn't take away from kind of the movement he helped create with that initial protest where, you know, he had a bunch of athletes follow his lead. He kind of reinvigorated, you know, the activist approach for athletes in a time where it's real easy for a lot of these guys not to do anything, right? Where it probably hurts their bottom line more than it helps it in a lot of these cases. But he took a stand for what he believed in, and I think he should be applauded for it, even if he's not going that route here.
It's always easiest to remain silent.
It will be real interesting to see where Colin Kaepernick ends up and if he does get a job as a free agent after reported by ESPN that he will stand during the anthem wherever he plays next season. Back to the Jets and the Blues on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. That's next on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN 1290. This is the Big Show. Jim, Troy, and Brandon with you. Thank you for joining us. It is 33 minutes past the hour. Cold one out there, people. Minus 18 with the wind chill. Minus 28 right now. Later on, it'll be going up to a high of minus 7. St. Louis Blues are in town today, and the puck will drop right here on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca at 7 o'clock with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns on the call. Yesterday at practice, we talked about Nick Petan was the odd man out on the forward lines. Goaltending-wise, Andre Pavlik, who has been on the IR, was a participant in practice. Prior to the practice, Connor Hellebuck was on the ice doing a session on his own with Wade Flaherty working on some stuff. So although Connor Hellebuck was there yesterday, he didn't partake in the Jets practice. He had his workout and on-ice session prior to the rest of the team. Andre Pavlik, as per head coach Paul Maurice, will be one of the two goaltenders tonight. And here's head coach Paul Maurice on what Hellebuck was doing at yesterday's practice.
Right, so we've liked his response to getting some individual time. Got a full-on practice yesterday, so we like getting him out there and getting him to do specific work to help his game.
So they wanted to give him some more one-on-one time with that. Andre Pavlik will be one of the goaltenders tonight. Do you think Pavlik, given his record against St. Louis, gets the start, or do they go with Connor Hellebuck? What do you make of this as they continue to work with the young goaltender?
It's a great question. I did think that the only, like the bounce when he's sort of sprawled out there and covering an immense amount of space to get to Hall, I think it was, who was unmarked, and that one lucky one that went off his shoulder and in, I don't really count that as a soft goal because of how ridiculous things were in the defensive zone there. But the last one just before he got pulled was one you'd like to see. So this is the way I feel in an overall sense. I don't know if they start him or not, but it is a very important game, I think, for Hellebuck if he does start. He has surrendered a boatload of goals in his last two starts. And when you're just talking about, you know, where you're at, whether they're your fault or not, they start to wear away at erode your confidence to some degree. And, you know, he had a real nice February going there. And then the last couple of games there, to surrender the number of goals that he did on the shots, it really took away from what was a real nice February, and I think it just puts a pile of importance for him as a young player to go in there and have a real nice outing tonight.
I think they're going to start Pavlik tonight. Just kind of trying to read between the lines here. It's a little fishy that Paul Maurice said Pavlik will be one of the two goalies going tomorrow. You know, like, why wouldn't you say Pavlik and Hellebuck will be? Like, I don't know. There's just something. I can just kind of feel something in the air that the Jets are kind of with Thorburn in, Pavlik going back to their greatest hits album. I don't know. Just a feeling. Just feeling that they're going to go back to him for whatever reason. I don't agree with it, but I just Spidey senses. I got a feeling that they'll go back with Pavlik.
Should never ignore Spidey senses.
This is the big show on TSN 1290. Well, this is the question because of his record against St. Louis. We all remember he set that team record in a second period with saves against St. Louis. There's still a chance, and it's not a big one, and it's not a very good one, and I don't think it's actually going to happen, but... So I'm just wondering if maybe because he was pulled in his last start, they give him a personal session. They have a ton of games coming up. They have Colorado tomorrow. They have a game on Monday at home. They have a game on Wednesday. Do they just sort of sit down and with the team? And do you guys read anything into the comments about maybe some confidence from the team in front of Pavlik when he was called up to maybe tonight they go with Pavlik, tomorrow they go with Hellebuck, and then the next two games, because there's a game in between each one, go back to Hellebuck? Like, is this still the teaching process that's going on? And because I agree with you, Brandon. I think they're going to start Andre Pavlik tonight.
I almost need to reach for a barf bag when I hear the confidence in front of Pav crap. I mean, I just don't it doesn't matter what level of hockey you play at. When the guy behind you, if you don't have confidence in him, to me, that makes you work harder if you don't want to surrender any shots again. So I just think it's a bunch of crap. They had fantastic goal support when Pavlik was in net, right? That's what happened during that time frame. I mean, when you're talking about the situation when Pav is in net and you go 4-4 over 8 games with a 3.55 save percentage, like, think about that for a sec. A 3.55 goals against as a team, you're surrendering that many goals against and you still go 4-4 during that time frame. They were pouring pucks into the net. I don't think that's related to them not having confidence or having confidence in the guy who's standing between the pipes. So I don't know. I remember the numbers. They were talking about him the last time he played before a St. Louis game. So if they were to decide to sit down Hellebuck here in this situation, you know, it is a back-to-back, right? So whether it's the front end or the back end, it all would add up and make sense. And maybe Pavlik's able to go in there and have a fantastic game. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd like to see Pavlik in tomorrow against Colorado. I think that's a good spot to put him in, especially because he's been off for so long too, right?
He's coming off the IR.
Yeah, like, he's been off for injury. The bye week was thrown in there too, and you're going to toss him in a must-win game against St. Louis. I mean, it's just interesting because the Jets went into this year kind of trying to figure out what they had with Connor Hellebuck in a way, or maybe more so getting a better read of where his game's at. And wouldn't a game like this against St. Louis at home with your playoff lives on the line, wouldn't that be kind of a prime look into the mind of mm-hmm. Connor Hellebuck and yeah. look into the mental fortitude, how strong he is, his ability to bounce back? Like, to me, this is just kind of a prime time example of maybe getting a real good glimpse into the kind of guy Connor Hellebuck can be between the pipes. To me, this is a game earmarked for him to start. I don't know why you would flip the switch on that, especially when you know everyone knows Pavlik's not going to be back next year. Like, to me, there's no possible upside in starting Pavlik in this game. Put him in against Colorado tomorrow, easier opponent, get him back into game action. He'll be fresh. I like that option better than going with him tonight.
The big show on TSN 1290, Jim, Troy, and Brandon talking about tonight's starting goaltender for the Winnipeg Jets. Do you buy into the whole there's still a chance and you go with, you know, who you think? Because I agree with you guys. Development-wise, he's pulled again in a game. I mean, this is the stuff we don't know is what they're working on in these private sessions where, you know, Connor Hellebuck spoke the other day And I don't know where what to take from his comments of, you know, I've been to hell and back and I've got to stop looking and listening to what people expect or the numbers I got here on my own and I'm going to go forward on his own. Like, it sounds like a very, very confident goaltender.
And there's what's wrong with that?
I don't have problems with the comments. I just don't know if I buy into them. It seems like every time he gets yanked from a game, he's telling us how confident he is in his game, which is great if he is. Like, that's I have no problem with the words he's saying and the confidence he says he has, but it seems to be come out like, do you think a rookie goaltender has been to hell and back?
Well, that's not up to us to, you know, if he feels whatever, in whatever way he's using that term, I don't really care about that. But I don't question, it's entirely possibly his fantastic confidence. As a young goaltender, he's had all of the years up to this point in time, you know, and that's the confidence is, there's a blend of cockiness in there, right? Where you're too young and dumb to lose that confidence. Like, there's,
and that's good.
Well, yeah, and I think most young athletes have that. I mean, time and failure can remove that from you, but I think it's way too early in his career for him to be lacking confidence. There hasn't been some sort of monumental meltdown or breakdown that could erode a young athlete's confidence. If you come into this situation with a pile of confidence and the level of success he enjoyed coming into the season was fairly monumental, you know, 60-some-odd games or having a handful of rough outings isn't going to alter that deep-down, deep-seated level of absolute confidence that a young athlete has.
You think it's been monumental? Like, I think it's been a good climb to the National Hockey League.
Well, he's had great success everywhere he was.
Well, he's been pulled a lot.
Well, this season you're talking about.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Like, maybe after having such a good career up until this point and then dealing with the being yanked a lot and everything that's gone on around the team this year and their lack of success, that's what I'm wondering if maybe I'm all happy for him if he's so confident and stuff. I just wonder, like, sometimes, and especially when I hear I know athletes look at stats. I know athletes look at the standings. This is the Big Show, by the way, on TSN 1290. And I know that they pay attention to that stuff. But it's rare that they come out and they say that, you know, I'm not going to pay attention to the numbers or what people are saying anymore. I've got to remain focused on what I'm doing. And I have confidence in myself. I got this far.
But a lot of that could be answering in that manner because of the questions that's being asked of him, right? Like, he's got the media coming at him, so he's dealing with that. If they're coming at him with all sort of negative stuff like that, that's
and that was the question.
Mentioning it.
That was a question. Sorry to cut you off. I believe that was a question. Was are you has this affected your confidence at all being pulled again or anything? As for Andrei Pavlik, he will be one of the two goaltenders, as Paul Maurice has said, and he spoke to the media yesterday, and he would like to get a lot of games down the stretch here.
Yeah, yes. Play the men's game I can and help the team to get in the playoffs. You know, that's pretty much everybody's goal right now because we're right there. We're fighting. Obviously, big game tomorrow. Every game is big right now. So we'll see what happens. I mean, like I said, the first question, I don't know what happened. So really, I just, whenever I've been going to be told to play, I'm going to play. So that's the plan.
And no doubt that he would like to play the rest of the game, sit on the stretch. That's pretty obvious. But whether they do, I agree with you guys when we talked about this a week ago that I think Connor Hellebuck should get the stretch of the games. I think you should see what they have. I'm just looking at, you know, albeit like a 3% chance, legitimately 3% chance of making the playoffs for the Jets. I think they do go with him tonight. And I don't mind that idea either, Brandon, of like playing Pavlik tomorrow because he hasn't played in so long.
Well, then they should, right?
But he has been practicing.
I hate goalies starting back-to-back. I don't care who the goalie is unless you're in dire, dire situations here. I'm always a fan of trying to limit a guy playing on consecutive nights. And the numbers show it, right? The numbers show that for the most part, basically every goalie in the NHL has some kind of a drop-off in that game.
Yeah, I would think that, are we in agreement then here on the Big Show on TSN 1290 that either guy will get at least one game this weekend, like either tonight or tomorrow? It'll just be interesting to see. I love the aspect of bringing him back in tonight, Connor Hellebuck. I just think they're going with Andrei Pavlik, and then whoever doesn't get the start tonight goes tomorrow against Colorado.
Yeah, I don't know that for sure because if Pav starts tonight and gets a shutout, would it surprise anybody of us if Maurice went with him again tomorrow night? No, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Well, if he gets a shutout, yeah. I mean, this is the thing that we sit here and go, you know, this isn't probably going to happen, but the team doesn't. The team sits there and goes, this is a do or die. We need a win tonight. And if we get a win tonight, then they're going to go for a win tomorrow night, despite the fact of what LA does and whatever St. Louis does after tonight, that they're going to keep fighting for this until it's legitimately mathematically over.
Well, yeah. Like, basically, they're at a point in time right now where it's win or die, right? So it's that mentality. I don't understand the point you're making by mentioning that.
I'm mentioning it because developmental-wise, we all think that Connor Hellebuck should get the rest of the starts this season, see what he can do, put him in every situation. But they're not going to have that philosophy and actually do that until they're mathematically eliminated, because they're just going to go out on game-by-game basis and dress the best lineup to win.
Yeah, well, how about Connor Hellebuck's a better goalie than Andre Pavlik?
What if Andre Pavlik plays and he wins? Sure. That's why I bring it up. That's why. We'll take a break here on the Big Show. Lots more to come here. We're going to talk about the Jets and Blues defensive play for both teams, and especially the Jets as well, as we continue to break down a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290. But up next, we'll touch on some NBA. Kevin Durant's injury, and the Warriors have their first losing streak in over 2 years. We'll get on that and the Breyer starts. And much more hockey to come and much more sports on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day, Jets and Blues on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. 7 o'clock is puck drop. Full pre- and post-game coverage here on the Big Show. Well, on TSN 1290, I should say, and pre-game coverage here on the Big Show. 51 minutes past the hour. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you today. And gentlemen, the Golden State Warriors have their first losing streak since 2015, late in the season. I believe it was around April. And their star free agent signing in Kevin Durant is out minimum a month with a knee injury. How much does this affect the Warriors? How much does this affect their playoff chances? And even if he does come back, how much does it affect their chances to win an NBA title?
I hope a lot, because I'm cheering for LeBron to go out and capture another championship. And it is interesting how many people are saying if Durant isn't ready to go and basically 100% come playoff time, it seems like a lot of people, half the people for sure, are saying that they're not going to get out of the West. So it is fascinating, because some of the role players that they've lost and how strong a couple the other teams are. So it is pretty interesting here. And I like the adversity and the challenge involved. But, boy, they better be looking out for San Antonio pretty good.
Yeah, I like the Spurs a lot. It's funny how quickly the Golden State Warriors went from the NBA's darlings to maybe the most hated. I know LeBron, wherever LeBron goes, might hold the mantle, but maybe the most hated team in the NBA. I was watching the game last night against the Bulls, and I don't like them. Like, I just don't like them at all now. Like, I've done a complete 180.
Really?
I don't like the Warriors at all. They look spoiled out there. They're whining, kicking their leg. Like, I don't know. I've just totally soured on them. And I think Durant moving is a big part of that, too, because I liked what they had going with OKC. I liked kind of the Durant-Westbrook versus the powerhouse offensive Warriors. So I'm totally cheering for the Spurs now. I think they do need Durant to take down San Antonio, because San Antonio is as well-oiled as it gets when it comes to, you know, a five-man unit playing out there. But I kind of like Houston, too. I like the D'Antoni resurrection story and James Harden playing as good as
Russell
Westbrook.
Talk to guys I can't stand. Harden, no.
Fair enough.
This is the Big Show at TSN 1290 as we continue to talk Jets and Blues in the Mercedes-Benz Power Hour coming up next, and also your chance to qualify for TSN's Ultimate Sports Trip, where you get to pick the place, the destination, and of course the tickets to the game you want to go to, and we will get you there. That's coming up in the next hour as well. The Ultimate Canadian Live Sports Tour continues. So who do you like in the NBA right now? Like Cleveland, I mean, you mentioned San Antonio. Even if Kevin Durant is healthy and comes back, you don't think the Warriors can do it again? I mean, there's a chance they can. I know everybody thinks there's a chance they can, but who do you sort of like if it was to start today?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't watch a pile of basketball, but once the playoffs get going, we'll always have a soft spot in my heart to watch We the North getting going and ramping it up. Hopefully, you know, Boston's surging pretty well, and Washington looks to be tough, so to some tough teams in front of Toronto. But most of my, like, I don't have any connection really whatsoever to any of the storylines in the West outside of if Golden State is clipping along and if they get Durant back, and it would be a lot of fun to watch another Cavalier-Warriors final. It would be neat to see LeBron slay that dragon again, but really all I pay attention to in the NBA right now is what Cleveland's doing, their recent pickups and how they've bolstered their whole situation, and hoping that they really come in and form into an absolute monster come playoff time.
Yeah, if Durant comes back, we're getting the trilogy. And that's about really? As good as it. Oh, for sure. For the NBA is so predictable, right? The Spurs can beat Golden State, but when they have Durant on the floor, they're unstoppable. There's just as much as I don't like it, they become unstoppable, and it sets up maybe the most anticipated finals rematch since last year.
Speaking of TSN 1290's Ultimate Canadian Live Sports Tour, one of the events, should you win or qualify and then win the event, you might want to take on to the Brier. It's in St. John's, Newfoundland, of course, this year, or you might want to get to that next year. And Team Mike McEwen heads Manitoba's crew out there. It's going to be an interesting one. Of course, Team Canada is defending champion Kevin Cooey out of Calgary. And Glenn Howard is there. The Brier starts this weekend. Mike McEwen looking for his first one. Tough to get out of the province. It's McEwen's rink is such a great story because they have been probably one of the top teams in Canada for a decade now. And it's so tough back when Jeff Stoughton was skipping a crew to get out of the province. He's now won it again, and he's heading to the Brier. So good luck to Mike McEwen at this year's Brier with his team of BJ Neufeld, Matt Wozniak, of course, Denny Neufeld, and a little man named, literally, John Mead, who's helping guide that ship, McEwen. Brier gets started this weekend in St. John's, Newfoundland, so good luck to Team Manitoba, and we'll see if they can come back with a Brier title. We'll take a break and get back in to the Jets and the Blues on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on the Big Show on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. H&L live from Boston, Pizza City Place at 3 o'clock. And then Rick Ralph, of course, will be in to take over, as he always does with his crew, to set you up on the Manitoba Building Trades Winnipeg Jets pregame show. Of course, puck drops at 7 o'clock with the Jets and the Blues. Paul Edmonds, Brian Munns on the call, and then Rick Ralph will have the Huron Windows Winnipeg Jets post-game show. Gentlemen, the defensive zone play of this team has been horrific. Did you guys hear the rant that Pierre Maguire and Ray Ferraro went on the Trade Center on TSN about basically the goaltending's being hung out to dry and that the defensive zone play is awful and it's systematic and everything else that is wrong with it?
I've heard bits of it. I didn't hear it in its totality.
It's a pretty good, and some people have called it scathing, but it's pretty interesting. Craig Button, by the way, will join us at 8 o'clock today on the Big Show to talk Jets and the National Hockey League. So when you look at that, and I think that's been the biggest issue with this team throughout the entire 6 years it's been here in Winnipeg, is its own defensive zone play and coverage. How do you fix this? Like, what are you putting this on, and whom do you put it on? And where do you see it going down the last 18 games of the season, and how does it get better?
Well, I don't think you can make it better by flicking a switch, and because of the importance of these final 18 games, all of a sudden, with some pixie dust, everything's going to get better. the vast majority early on of the major errors I saw in the defensive zone, the forwards played a huge role in it. You'd see guys, because the Jets play typically man coverage, and that how that is determined is upon entry of the zone, you just see some mistakes made sometimes by the forwards in what they were supposed to be doing. And communication is obviously massive there, right? For instance, if Buff is up the ice, and just to use him as the example, if he's up the ice and he is the fourth man coming back into the zone and he's got to pick up his man as he reads it coming into the zone in that manner, you've got to use all kinds of communication. If after that Buff settles to where he's supposed to be in and around the net, and then you got to start screaming exchanges and things like that for your coverages. And there's sometimes the mistakes are just outrageous and glaring. You think about the last game we saw when Line A, for instance, when Toby Enstrom's got a guy, he's got the guy, and Line A's come back checking fantastically and working his butt off, but instead of chasing the same man that Toby Enstrom is, his head's got to be on a swivel, and you got to pick up the most dangerous man and the second man into the zone there as he's second man in pursuit, and Toby Enstrom's got to be directing him in that manner. You see, the mistakes happen all the time in the first or second goal. The second goal with Buff and Enstrom just completely out to lunch in that situation, and Buff losing track of his man, who's Granlund, who wanders out to the front of the net. It's just some of the mental errors. I know a lot of the NHL teams right now play man, and I understand that. But there's still like there's a blend of teams doing different things. I don't like man whatsoever. But the very least, if you're in man, communication is key, and you've got to be able to think right. There's a little part of me that really is concerned with what sits on the shoulders of some of the guys defensively sometimes when they can't make – it's obvious they're making the wrong decision in picking up the guys they're supposed to have. It really makes you wonder about basically the level of intelligence out there and certainly the level of communication.
Well, yeah, and the level of discipline and the level of structure, because you can play man and be very successful. There's lots of good teams in the NHL that play man inside their own zone, but there has to, like you said, there has to be that level of communication – discipline, intelligence, all those things kind of factor into that. And I don't know if that's the best way for the Jets to go right now. Maybe they've tried zone. Maybe Paul Maurice has looked at it, tried zone in practice, and it's even more of a mess than what's going on right now. So, I mean, when you look at it, to me, it's when it's where it's at right now, when you're bottom three in goals against in the NHL, unfortunately, it's a tertiary issue. There's three different levels here. The coaches, the players, and the goaltending. And they're all to blame for this, which is why the number is where it's at, right? If it was just the goaltending, you'd probably be able to find a way to fix it, whether it's this year or next year, right? If it's just the players, well, that becomes a bit of a bigger issue. And then if it's just the coaching staff and they're misusing the talent that they have, can that be fixed in the offseason? I don't know. But it's right now it's a combination of all three things. You have the players inside their own end, a lot of the time on the wrong side of the puck, meaning that they're not in front of the player and the net. There's a lot of times, and I would say the forwards most culpable of this, where they're thinking offense as soon as the Jets defensemen get the puck. And anytime there's a turnover, there's no support to help these guys out. So when you make a bad play, some teams are able to have kind of layers back there where it doesn't hurt you, but the Jets are so far out of the zone already, so far away from the play that everything just kind of compounds itself there.
I'll tell you something, bro. It's not always the offense. The first goal in the most recent game against Montreal, Dustin Byfuglien leaves a sort of an awkward pass for Ben Chiarot, who clearly doesn't have full control of it or is in a comfortable position, and Buff flies the zone. And a turnover ends up happening. Buff is at about the blue line when the turnover occurs, and his man is able to come back, who he first was on, and score the goal. And Buff is just out nowhere, no man's land, after leaving an uncomfortable pass or shot and flying out of the zone. What are you doing as a defenseman making that decision? It's remarkable. Some of the decisions you see back there are mind-blowing.
You're listening to The Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. To me, and I like your analogy of it's three things, I don't put the poor defensive zone coverage and play on the coach. What I put on the coach, because it's about players executing. That's what it's about. There's no coach sitting here drawing up what we've been witnessing throughout this year, going, this is the way to play. However, what I do put on the coaching staff is it is your job to get the players to execute that. If they're not executing it, you have to figure out a way to convince them to start executing it. That's what I put on the coach. The play itself, and as you said, Brandon, on the wrong side of the puck and everything else, I put on the players, and it's about execution. And I'll go back to the first goal on Tuesday against Minnesota. Toby Enstrom is nowhere in the proper position to back up Dustin Byfuglien when that puck is turned over in the offensive zone. He's too far over. And those are mental mistakes that I think, from what I understand and from what I'm seeing throughout the year, and the reason I've sort of asked about this man-to-man stuff around some people in the game and around the league and stuff, and they said most of the National Hockey League is going man-to-man because of the speed of it. The youth of it and the speed of it, the zone is getting burnt far too often by the speed and the youth in the league. So most teams go to a man-to-man now.
So that makes no sense to me, because if you are dealing with a high level of speed, and if you're in man, you are dead. Zone can help to snuff out speed much better than man-to-man can. And on that first goal, I got to say, JT, on that first goal, the turnover that occurs with Ehlers, Enstrom's coming into the zone of the Wild there, looking for passes in offensive situation. That turnover puts Enstrom in a dead man type of a position where he wasn't playing defense there. He's thinking offense because the Jets have the puck. So, and I said that in breaking down the goal right after the game, where that turnover put the defense in a real difficult situation that makes it look like Enstrom might be out of position, but he's coming into the zone expecting and hoping for a pass. You know,
the debate of zone over man-to-man is the reason you play man-to-man is deal with speed. If you're in a zone, you're standing. You're flat-footed and playing a space as opposed to the man.
But you're, well, I don't know, flat-footed, but you're picking up guys as they come to and fro. JT, if you've ever played defense of any sport, if you have to pursue someone who's faster than you, you're in a lot of trouble. If you're standing there in a zone and someone's coming into that zone and you can address them in that manner, to me, it makes way more sense. If someone's faster than you and you're a man, you're dead.
To me, you're playing a space, and if a guy comes through your space full steam, you have a better chance to catch him if you're on him already trying to play man-to-man than you are to try and get to him in that space from zone to man-to-man. Like, if you get burnt man-to-man, yes, a guy's faster than you. But if you get burnt in a zone, it's because you're trying to get to the guy coming through your space who already has a full head of steam up. But anyways, that's why I've been explained why more and more teams in the Jets have gone man-to-man. But to me, to get back to Brandon's point, this is the big show, by the way. We're talking defensive woes for the Winnipeg Jets on TSN 1290. To me, I think Paul Maurice is a great coach. I think he can coach this system. It's about the execution from the players. And at some point, they have to buy into this. Like, they have to commit themselves. And I think what I'm seeing this year is because of the youth and the skill that this team has, in abundance more than we've seen before, I think they've allowed these sort of open up play a little bit more to not sort of control the skill and that they have. And I think that that's a fine line this year. I think it's a season of, as we've heard from Maurice and even Cheveldayoff the other day to a point, of allowing things to develop, giving a lot more leeway to a lot of players and a lot of youth in order to get this skill flowing and to not sort of hold it back or rein it in. And I think that's caused them a lot on the defensive side of the game. And to me, the important part throughout this season and heading into next season is convincing these guys to commit to the defensive style of the game as much as they commit to the offensive style of it.
When you're saying that, we're really only talking about two guys, though, in that forward crew with Ehlers and Laine that are... You know, you can't. I don't think you can highlight, like, Armia is not a problem defensively as a young player with this team. I don't think Dano, when he's in, who hasn't been in very much, I don't think he has been. Patan seems to be pretty responsible defensively as well. So it's interesting, which, like, as far as, okay, these young guys that need to be coddled, I understand that, and taught and all the rest of it, and you're going to expect certain mistakes from them. But yet, when you watch a lot of the mistakes being made, it's not the young guys necessarily the majority of the time, and it's veterans that you would like. If we think the coaching is sound here and the systems are decent enough, then at some point in time, you have to look at the personnel and make a very difficult decision.
And I agree with that, but there has been, like, Nick Petan turned the puck over three times on the power play against Minnesota. And turnovers are a part of team defense. And turnovers are why you get caught on things. Patrick Laine's defensive game has not been good this year. It's been better the past couple of games, but it's awful. But the veterans, you're right. I think Brian Little is a phenomenal 200-foot player. I think Blake Wheeler is a very good 200-foot player and good in the defensive zone. I don't think Mark Scheifele's there yet. I don't think Mark Scheifele is anywhere near what Wheeler and Little are defensively. And that he's a young player, like, or a veteran player on this team, even though he's 23. Like, there's an overall commitment to the game that I think the team and the players have to make. Well, the players do, is what I'm saying.
You have to remember, though, that Scheifele's also going up against often the very best the other team has to throw out there, right? So in watching mistakes that he's making, if and when he's making them, he's making them against the best. Another thing of concern also is shift length and time, right? Sometimes it looks like when they're failing in their defensive zone, it's at the end of a long shift. And I think Paul Maurice has touched on this before, where the guys are, there was one play specifically in that last game, the 3-on-2 against the Jets, where Mark Scheifele looks like he quit skating, but it's at the end of a long shift specifically. So there's a number of things coming into play.
Well, we can go back and forth on individual plays. The bottom line is, this is a system that defensively relies heavily on all the forwards, relies the most on centermen.
Well, that's true of all systems, what you just said.
Well, fair, but they all have to be better then. Like, we can break down every play, and we can point out how every player on the team has been burnt three times and how every player has made three good defensive plays. But it's not good overall.
Well, and that kind of leads into the third issue, right, with the goaltending, where when your top guy has a 907, that's not good enough. You know what I mean? When you have two goalies sub-900, your defensive system is going to look a little more wonky when you don't have goalies making stops all the time too, right? So that's why, to me, it's so hard to just pin it on one thing, right? Like, you can say, oh, you got to give it to Paul Maurice because he's not coaching the club well inside their own zone. Well, I mean, that could be fair to an extent too. But if Hutchinson and Pavlik and Hellebuck, even if they're all around 908, 910, somewhere slightly below average, you know, that team save percentage all of a sudden pushes up into not great territory, but you're talking high teens. You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden the issues aren't as bad. So it's just, that's what happens when you're in the bottom three. To me, sometimes goaltending is kind of the easy thing to point at there, but when all these things are layering on top of each other, one after the other, that's when you get the issues that they have here. And it's just up to how do you correct these going into next season, because it's going to take an improvement in each one of those categories for this team to be better.
We got to take a break, but we'll touch more on this. But just quickly, guys, is it not, like, to me, the biggest thing is it's on the players to commit to it. Like, they have to sort of find that two-way game and say, we're going to take this as just as importantly as we are to scoring five goals a game. They're seventh in the league in scoring. Like, that, I think now the players have to sit down and go, we need to be just as good at this as we are at scoring.
Yeah, and to start this season off, one of the challenges for Paul Maurice was going to be that whole balance, right, with the skilled situation. Like, to score five goals on the Wild and lose the game is a real unfortunate situation that you can't allow happen.
Your chance to qualify next as TSN 1290 is set with the Ultimate Canadian Live Sports Tour on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
12th caller through at 780-1290 with the countdown to Canada's 150th birthday. We here at TSN1290 are taking off on the True North strong and free with our ultimate Canadian live sports tour. Listen for your chance to qualify at 7:15 daily, 12:15, and 5:15 p.m. And the destination? Well, that's up to you. You pick the sport, you pick the Canadian city, we'll pick up the tab. We'll take care of the airfare, accommodations, and tickets, and you just enjoy the experience. Just for qualifying, listeners will be off to an upcoming Winnipeg Jets game day. Visit tsn1290.ca for additional chances to qualify and input where you want to be headed. Our first grand prize winner of four will be announced on the Big Show Friday, March the 10th.
How about a little
racing?
Go catch some Canadian Grand Prix in Mount Royal, June 9th to 12th.
Have you ever been to a...
I have been.
You have, eh? Because
I have been to that one.
I have a buddy who go. You've been to that one? Yeah. I have a buddy who used to go to the one in Vancouver, and I never, like, I wasn't big into it, and he said, doesn't matter, you will love it.
Yeah, and I have to say that I was a little... I prefer the boys that just keep it down to the floor and turn left all the time. Instead of going to watch who you can watch all the time around the track here, you're sitting in grandstands, and that's what... You're watching a video screen, and all of a sudden you hear that... That's all you see. They're gone. So it's a little bit weird, but the overall experience is pretty cool.
Cool. Well, we have our qualifier today. Who is it, Brandon?
Mr. Curtis Brown.
Curtis Brown. How are you today, Brown?
Excellent.
Excellent. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You're a qualifier. You get two Winnipeg Jets tickets just for doing so. And then if your name is drawn on March the 10th, where do you want to go?
My son's a huge Habs fan, so probably Montreal.
Montreal!
Nice.
Would you be standing during the anthem and crying like PK Subban if you won this trip?
might happen.
Good.
His eyes were sweating, JT. It wasn't crying.
Is there a team you'd want to see there, like the Jets, or is it doesn't matter?
You know what? I would probably leave it up to my son to figure out what he would want to see.
How old's your son?
He's 16.
Oh, that would be nice, yeah. Nice little father-son trip there. That's a good idea, and in the beautiful city of Montreal.
You bet.
Hey, Curtis, we really appreciate you listening. Congratulations on qualifying. Maybe you and your son can hit the Jets game or whoever you'd like to go with. And then, of course, we hope to you or someone else's name will be drawn on March the 10th. Maybe it will be you. Best of luck.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank
Good luck,
you.
Man.
Curtis Brown, our qualifier in TSN 1290's Ultimate Canadian Live Sports Tour, says he's going to take his son and have a father-son moment in beautiful Montreal.
Who would you want to go see if you're at the Bell Center? It doesn't matter who you want to go see when you're at the Bell Center. You're at the Bell Center, man.
That's true. Would have been nice to be there last night.
Yeah.
To see. Ooh. We'll talk about PK Subban as well when we come back. But up next, it's Shane Knighty talking Jets Blues on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Your next chance to qualify for TSN 1290's Ultimate Canadian Live Sports Tour coming up with Rick Ralph and the Don Vito Roundtable at 12:15. Hustler and Lawless will also get a qualifier today at 5:15 p.m. And we do it daily, our first of four, where you pick the sport, the Canadian city, and the destination is drawn on the Big Show Friday, March the 10th. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. H&L at 3, puck drop at 7. Full pre- and post-game coverage as well with Rick Ralph. And our next segment is brought to you by Johnson Waste Management. And it is with the Sheriff, former NHL defenseman, Stanley Cup champion, and our Jets analyst, Mr. Shane Knighty. How are you, sir?
I'm good, gentlemen.
Did you give Drew Stafford any sort of lessons on where to go in Boston, where to hang out, what to do?
He'll figure it out. Although it's the time of the year, I don't know if you have much time for that either than you're playing games and eating. And it'll be fun. It's a great city. The good thing about Boston is that everything's close together. For a big city, you can walk pretty much everywhere, and definitely no shortage of good spots to eat.
Sheriff, if you were to break down things defensively for this team, what is the most glaring part that needs the most work or improvement?
Boy, that's a big question. I guess, you know, everything's fresh in the mind. So you're looking at the last two games, this and Toronto. And Toronto, I'm going to take out. They're missing two key parts and Trouba and Anstrom, which is a big deficit from a blue line core. Although you still work in units, but there are some breakdowns there. And of course, Minnesota, you come off the break, which is no excuse, but some glaring ones. And goaltending, it's such a big part of it, and turnovers, everybody thinks initially defensive zone, and you go back and you go to the first goal of the game and coming into the offensive zone, turnovers just inside the blue line. You've got everyone moving forward, anticipating what should be an offensive zone play, and it turns around quickly. All of a sudden, it's a breakaway the other way. But you do need to cover in layers. So there's areas that need to be better. Is it drastic? I don't know if it's that. I think maybe it comes down to a breakout. I think a lot of times they get themselves in trouble where the play doesn't get cut off quick enough in the defensive zone, whether it's an errant pass, whether it's a breakout that doesn't get out. I think communication is obviously – the thing about defense is you have to work hard, number one, and you have to be able to read and react. So intelligence comes into it and things happen quickly. So, and it's learning. You've got to learn. So there's a growing process to it with the young team, which I know nobody likes that argument, but it's a fact. And then goaltending, you need a save to cut the play off. And, you know, this is something that needs to continue to get better for the Jets. And, you know, against Minnesota, it's not good. Paul Maurice pointed out all the points. And I think he's, you know, pretty about a defensive zone, goaltending, you know, need to be better. Those were the two areas, and those are two key areas. So you look at the young teams, and it was interesting because the ages came out, and the 10 youngest teams out of them, there's two in a playoff situation. And the top five, Carolina, Arizona, Tampa, Winnipeg, Buffalo, the youngest. Then you got Toronto, Columbus, and Edmonton, and then New Jersey and Colorado. So Columbus and Edmonton are the only two in. While you look at them, they got the number two goalie and the number four. Bobrovsky's got a 9.28. Talbot's got a 9.20. So those are the two reasons, those two teams really, to me, two big reasons, part of it, it's not all of it, are in playoff position. In Toronto, Anderson's got all right at 9.16, but they're in the Atlantic Division, so I'm going to give them a pass because I think that is an easier division to make hay in. Back to the Jets, it comes down to me there has to be more of a commitment defensively, and they've got a young goaltender that's growing. And we heard Connor Hellebuck, there's confidence. That's great. It's not an easy league. Everybody has success in everything they do coming into the NHL. There's a lot that have it and don't get into the NHL. There is a process to become good in the National Hockey League. It doesn't just happen. Some guys it does, but that is more rare. Usually there is a curve in which the learn has to happen and you have to develop. So there's a lot of things that come into it. Should the Jets be better right now? I think yes. But at the same time, I don't think they're that far off.
Sheriff Shane Knighty laying down some knowledge here. Very interesting stuff on the Big Show TSN 1290 on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day.
Come say that to my house?
I would, and no offense to anybody at your house, but I don't think it would do you any good.
Yeah, and I don't think you'd win the argument either.
No, I don't think so either. So
I'm still low four.
I'm still trying to win one with Troy here. We'll see how that goes. And then if I win one of those, I will come over to your house for you. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290. Shane, I heard Connor Hellebuck's comments again, and to me it's the third time. I haven't talked to him this year. I haven't talked to him since last season. But it's the third time where he's telling us how confident he is. And when I hear young players say that, it's to me it's, you know, the more you tell somebody you're confident, you don't need to tell them that if you are. But I know he was asked a question yesterday. Where do you think his confidence is at right now?
I like a confident goaltender. I think that you have to have a belief in your ability to play a professional sport. And you have to have a stubbornness and a willingness. But there also has to be the willingness to be as confident as you are that you need to be better. That, you know, you can believe in your abilities, but you have to get better as a goaltender and you have to learn. And I think for Connor Hellebuck, he's learned a lot this year, and he kind of said that you know, you have to develop a mentality to pushing things apart, especially when you're in such an exposed position as a netminder. And I think back to, you know, probably very confident in his abilities, and he never made the NHL basically till he was 30 and then became one of the best, and that's Tim Thomas. And I believe it was the year I'm going back to 08, and I remember after the season, you know, he had a confidence that you know, at that time, he was a good goaltender. He was a competitive goaltender. And it was when we first made the playoffs, first round, after Boston hadn't been in playoffs for years. Made it, lost to, I believe, we got in an eighth spot, lost to Montreal in seven games. Remember after that season, he was like, he thought he did everything he could. And I remember there's a little bit of an argument. He learned, you know, maybe working more with the team. And there's certain areas. I think rebound control is a big one. It was an adventure when he'd make a save. He'd do everything to make the save, but he never knew where the rebound went. Well, he came back the next year, and I, you know, from then on, you know, he won a Stanley Cup. He won a Vezina. He won a Conn Smythe the years after. I think he set a record when we won the Stanley Cup that year for save percentage. I believe it's the record. So there was a confidence there, but there was also willingness that he had to adjust his game. And I think that's something, and that happened in his 30s. So Connor Hellebuck's going to learn that now because he's in the NHL a lot early. There is, so I'm saying I like the confidence he has, but I want there to be a willingness that, you know what, there's still things to learn. There's always a process that's going to happen, and it's going to happen throughout your career. Every year you can still pick up things. Sidney Crosby still works on parts of his game, and that's about becoming better. So, you know, there's some good things about what he said, and there's some other things that I think, you know, he's going to work on to get better and to work with his team and understand that. It is a tough position. It is one I'm glad I never played. It's not one I want my kids to play because it is difficult and it's exposed and there's a lot of pressure to it. So there is a mindset and a mental strength you really have to be successful to play it.
Your thoughts on the St. Louis Blues under the leadership of Mike Yeo and how it's changed?
Well, we saw the initial reaction, right? You come out and everything's on fire, and then you know, that's usually how it happens when there's a change like that. But then, you know, things have settled in, and now you lose a key piece like Kevin Shattenkirk. So, you know, I don't think much has changed when you look at the structure and the way they want to play the game. There'll be slight adjustments that Mike Yeo would bring in, but he was already on the bench. And you could see the transition. He was brought in as associate coach to kind of take over for Hitchcock. I don't think they thought it would be this early. The thing that Mike Yeo will bring more than Ken Hitchcock will be there will be a lot more of a calm presence on the bench, a little bit of an easier breath for the players in the room, because Ken Hitchcock is a brilliant mind and a great coach, but he challenges his players to the point where there's usually, sitting between the bench, usually every game you're going to get a verbal argument between him and a player. That's just the way, and that's the way it's always been. That's a little bit of that old school. I think he's kind of calmed down over the years, so Mike Yeo brings more of a, you know, a calm presence, more of a, I guess, a new age coach mentality to the team. And that said, I think, you know, St. Louis is kind of caught here between, you know, with the moves they've made. Do I think they're a contender? No, but they have been for how many years? So they're in where they've kept some key pieces, but they're starting to move some youth in and into kind of some sort of a rebuild, but trying to hang on. So it's interesting because they're kind of in between right now. With LA winning, I think St. Louis and Winnipeg are the two teams that are going to be really tough here to find their way into a playoff spot.
Teeing up Jets and Blues on TSN 1290 is the big show. We're talking with Shane Knighty. Jim, Troy, and Brandon are with you as well. Nick Patan wasn't along the forward lineups yesterday. Is that just because, as we hear, it's a bigger, tougher, stronger game tonight against St. Louis, or is there a learning process here?
I think both, possibly. I think Nick Patan, and there's a lot of things to like in his game, but when you play his position and you get the power play time, you need to see some points. That's what Nick Patan's game, and he's had some glorious chances to score. And I think of the last time they played St. Louis, I think it was Robbie Fabry in an open net that made a save, and he's hit some posts. And you know, when that happens for a young player, and I think the power play last game, he had a few turnovers. He starts to overthink now, and things aren't happening as quickly. So sometimes it's good for a young player maybe to come out, watch the game, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. So I think that's part of it. I think, you know, get Kopp and Dano back in the lineup. I'm excited to see what these two guys can do. Mark O'Donnell, such a, a heavy body. He's going to, they practiced the power play yesterday, so they kind of had him working the goal line, which I like, because he can go to the front of the net. I think he's strong. If he can kind of, and I don't want to compare Slovak players, but I think Marian Hossa played with such a strong presence on the power play off the goal line, because he has that ability to come off there with such strength and can either make the, jam play to the net, get the puck to the net, or he can make a little play, good hands, strong in his skates. And if Dano could develop into something like that, that's a pretty good weapon to have on the power play. So interested to watch that. And Andrew Kopp back in the middle, versatile, great for a young player to be able to do that. So, and Patano learned. So I'm excited to see the two new young guys back in the line. I shouldn't say new guys, but guys back from injury here play tonight.
Sheriff, just going back to Ken Hitchcock real quick, at 65 years old, in your opinion, will he be back in the league next year?
It's a good question. I don't know if I would have Ken Hitchcock back behind the bench. I think he would be the perfect guy to be in an, I'm thinking of the
an
right
advisor.
Word. Thank you. What is it?
Advisor?
Advisory role.
Yeah,
advisor. He'd be the advisor for the head coach to bring in someone that's up top, that's in the meetings, and deals strictly with the coaches. I think that'd be valuable for an organization to bring someone in like that. They could bring that knowledge. And, does it happen back in Dallas where there was success? Because there's a lot of rumors about what's going on down there. But that's where I see Ken Hitchcock. I think his knowledge is too great to leave it out of the game. But it's at a point where he could come in and be a great advisor for a team, an advisor to the coaching staff and, to management, to both.
Shane, we appreciate your time as always. Have a great call tonight.
I will, guys. Have a good weekend.
Thanks so much, Sheriff. Take care, man.
We'll take a break and touch on some NHL news and notes when we come back, including PK Subban's return to Montreal last night with the Nashville Predators. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Thanks once again to Shane Knighty for joining us. He'll be on TSN 3 tonight. Paul Edmonds, Brian Munns have the call on TSN 1290, Jets and Blues. Shane Knighty's segment was a presentation of Johnson Waste Management, recognized at best in the business 10 years in a row. Jim, Troy, and Brandon with you here on The Big Show on a Friday. It's cold out, so dress up. It will get up to a high of -7 today only. So make sure you dress for the weather. Last night, PK Subban returned to Montreal. He's been there for a couple of days, honored for all his charity work with the Children's Hospital in Montreal and just a fan favorite. Was given a tribute prior to the game and actually brought him to tears. What did you think of PK Subban's return to Montreal last night?
Well, that part of it was just, that was beautiful, man. Just to see the reaction between the fans and the length of the applause and how it affected PK Subban. I'll never fully understand what went down inside the dressing room there. From all accounts, anytime you've heard him interviewed, every time you see anything about the man, he just seems like such a he's got such a good heart. And you've seen the specials with his family. He comes from a great family, real strong foundation. It's mystifying as to what happened behind the scenes there in Montreal. But boy, the fans sure seem to love him, and seems like a first class cat, and still wishing him well. And it was just wonderful to see the level of appreciation by the fans of the Habs.
What are your thoughts on the whole, I guess, ceremony and honoring? And like, usually it's done in game. There's a break in the game, and there's a video played, and somebody sends it. Prior to the game, the tears flowing, and I'm thinking from a Montreal Canadiens standpoint, if you're sitting on the bench and you're watching this other player prior to the puck drop that you're going to go play against, are watching this.
You just want it over with, right? And that's a real interesting question, man, because every single time I see it, like whether, pick your for Ladd coming back to Winnipeg or any like that. And normally when they do it in that time frame for a TV timeout or something like that, it seems to be timed well and kind of gets over with and you go on. But no matter what, I don't care how – I don't know, maybe I'm a little cold or heartless with this, but if I'm on the home team, I want that out of the way as quickly as possible. So the length of that pregame was interesting for sure. And I don't know that that gives you any sort of advantage. I don't know if there's any lingering effect or anything like that. But one thing for sure, if I was playing on that home team and we were paying tribute to someone that was here before, no matter how wonderful and successful the whole thing was, no matter how much of a buddy he was, I want it done, gone, out of the way as quickly as possible.
And do you want the home crowd chanting, clapping, standing ovation for Subban 5 minutes into play as it goes along, right? Because it wasn't going to stop after a minute. Uh-huh. Right? Like that thing went on forever there. I guess
the price you pay when you ship out a dude that's loved like that.
I get it from Montreal's perspective where you have the tribute and then it's American anthem, Canadian anthem, puck drop, face. Like, you know, it takes a little bit of juice out of the whole thing. Uh-huh. You know, I said this at the time of the trade and I still firmly believe it now when there was the rumors of PK being a problem in the locker room. If there's a problem in my locker room, I'm not looking at PK Subban. I'm looking at everyone around him who has a problem with that guy. Because players like that, and maybe more importantly, men like that, come around very, very few and far between. And, how beloved he was, and almost universally, all the Habs fans that I saw and talked to and listened to on Twitter, it was 99% should never have traded this guy. How could you trade somebody like this? And I still feel that way. You know, you just wonder if it was Michel Therrien or Pacioretty who Bergevin wanted to listen to, because Therrien's gone right now.
Yeah.
And you have a guy like PK Subban who was maybe the most beloved player in franchise history.
We're talking PK Subban's return to Montreal on the Big Show, TSN 1290. That's an interesting question, because if there's 9 or 10 guys, you can't get rid of them. And then you wonder about the Michel Therrien thing, because they obviously didn't get along. It wasn't the philosophy. And we've done a couple of segments here on just the system they play wasn't suited to his style of game. But it's real interesting because it's less than a year since this trade and the head coach isn't there anymore. So as a GM, you potentially fired the guy that maybe you sided with. If that was the case, I'm not saying it was. I don't know.
It wasn't.
But then you are now traded the guy too, so both of the issues that you had are gone now. It's like, it doesn't this not question Bergevin? Does it not have to? Not just because of this trade, but because of like what's going on or what it was, or
what if the decision you had to make was between Pacioretty and Subban?
Bye bye, Max.
Yeah, okay, but I'm just saying,
but that's what I'm saying. I don't think it was just one guy. Well, you don't trade a guy because two guys don't get along. You trade a guy because 10 guys don't get along with him.
If there's a real – well, that's a fair point to make. But I don't – yeah. Like, I've been told a little bit of the inner workings of the situation in Montreal, and I know the guy that had the C on his chest, that they did not get along at all.
We'll talk more about this with Craig Button and some Jets when he joins us next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Four minutes past the hour here on The Big Show, TSN 1290. Jim, Troy, and Brandon with you. We'll continue to tee up a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day as the Jets host the Blues tonight at 7 on our great station, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. We're also going to delve into some CFL talk. We have a six-pack coming up here at the bottom of the hour, and then the Boston Pizza fan line. We ran out of time for all the calls yesterday discussing Kevin Cheveldayoff and his comments on where the Jets are at and everything else today. We'll delve into some other issues as well. But right now we're going to talk with TSN analyst and TSN scout, Mr. Craig Button. How are you? Welcome back to the program.
I am good, Jim. How are you today?
Very well, thank you. Good to talk with you again. I guess we'll just start with, we were just discussing in our previous segment, the return of PK Subban to Montreal, and specifically just, you know, normally it's done during game with a video during a stoppage and the crowd applause. What did you think of the whole presentation last night and how it affected P.K. Subban, especially from a Montreal Canadiens standpoint and players on the bench?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it was a celebration of what P.K. meant to the Montreal Canadiens. I think it was incredibly well done. And, I mean, the next time I see something not well done in Montreal will be the first time. I think it gave the fans a real opportunity to salute him, because I think Montreal knew how popular PK was, and I'm talking about the Canadiens organization, and I think it was really touching. And you know, he was a teammate for a long time. I think the players respect. I don't think it affected PK in an adverse way in terms of his play, but you can see he was clearly touched by it and very emotional.
Craig, how high are you right now on the Minnesota Wild after picking up Hanzel and all that they're doing right now?
Well, I mean, I think you have to be high on Minnesota just because of how well they've played. You know, they didn't just get Hanzel. They got Hanzel into a really good spot in their lineup. You know, a lot of times, you know, teams make trades and, you know, you're adding to your team, but is it the right spot? They have Koivu and Eric Staal. So now Hanzel can just sit right in there. They got a big center ice. You know, it gives them a chance to, you know, patrol that area of the ice in a little bit more forceful manner throughout their lineup. So I think that's a real positive move for the Minnesota Wild in terms of enhancing their team. And I mean, you start watching how the Chicago Blackhawks are playing, and you know, they're starting to wrap it up, and Patrick Kane's wrapping it up, and you know, Chicago's been such a top team. Minnesota has found themselves on the short end of the playoffs a few times here now. So I think that's done with the idea to bolster it. But right now for me in the West, you know, the three teams that stand out for me are San Jose, Minnesota, and Chicago. So, you know, you start to consider how that will play out come playoff time, and you want to give yourself the best chance. And I think Hanzel's a real good fit for the Wild.
Craig, we've talked all week here, especially after the trade deadline, about Kevin Cheveldayoff and his comments on where he feels the team is at and his belief in the coaching staff. And sort of, we've been given some insight from Paul Maurice about a month ago and Cheveldayoff about a day ago, just that this has been, the main emphasis has been about development. What do you think the most important thing for Cheveldayoff is this offseason? Because I think for the first time in a long time, he finally has some assets to go sort of get what he needs. What do you think those needs are, and how important of a summer is this for the Jets GM?
Well, you know, Jim, I think that, like, you know, everybody has needs, and when you're closer to the bottom of the league than the top of the league, those needs might be a little bit more pressing, I would say. You know, one of the things that I think when you're, you know, going through adding younger players and giving them more responsibility is you have to be patient, and you have to understand where you are with the young players, and then you have to identify, okay, how do we want to move forward, and how can we move forward? I think they need, if I was looking at their lineup, I have no issues with their forward group. I think that they have to find a way to solidify their goaltending. And I mean, hey, listen, Captain Obvious, no kidding, right? I mean, when you have a save percentage where it's at and a goals against where it's at, but I don't think it's just solely in the net. I think it's also on the blue line. I think they need a little more steadying presence on the blue line. You know, you talk about, like, I think you have to be able to make a pass to come out of your zone. I think you have to be able to get the pucks and move them out. But I think they need somebody that is positioned. They need a better emphasis, and this needs to come from the coaching staff as well as from a player or two that perhaps they can acquire. But a real positional strength on the blue line, a real emphasis on, you know what, we don't have to get ourselves running around in our own zone. I think the Winnipeg Jets get themselves into a lot of their own problems. But I think part of that is coaching, and I think part of that is with respect to some of the players they have. So that's the first, you know, the coaching staff has to look where they can improve the way they play, and then Kevin Cheveldayoff has to look at what type of player can come in there and solidify that and build that. And I'll give you an example, and maybe people in Winnipeg won't remember, but we had two players in Dallas, Darren Hatcher and Richard Matvichuk. Now, Richard Matvichuk was an Western Hockey League Defenseman of the Year after we drafted him in the first round. And he became a stalwart on the blue line. He's coaching in Prince George now with the Cougars. He became a stalwart in terms of positional strength and territorial. He could pass the puck, and he could make a play, and he could skate, but he didn't put up the offensive numbers. But that type of an identity, that type of a player, think back to the New Jersey Devils and think back when they were winning, and think of a guy like Kenny Danico. And think about, he wasn't flashy. Talking about positional strength and taking care of business, that type of player I think they could really benefit from.
Craig Button from TSN joining us here on the Big Show this morning, TSN 1290.
Craig, when you talk about the running around that can occur sometimes in the jet zone and impactful players, Dustin Byfuglien is one of those kind of guys that can get a little bit loose sometimes, and it seems to contribute to the level of chaos that the Jets have defensively. Your thoughts on what he's bringing to the table, and will this team's identity forever be tied to that sort of level of chaos so long as he's a part of this team?
I'm going to answer the second one first. I'm going to say no. I think a big part of it is players all have a different style of play and a different approach to playing. And I think that Dustin Byfuglien is an incredibly unique player. And I really like Dustin Byfuglien. But I think at points in time, and I call it the contract. The contract between team and player, coaching staff and player. To try to say, hey, Dustin, you know what? We're not trying to ask you to do something completely different, but we're asking you to mine this area a little bit better and to take it. And because it'll help us not only as a team, but it'll help other players get a little bit more settled in their game. And yeah, it's, you got to try to convey to the player how he won't be harmed by it. You have to convey to him how it can really help the team. I don't have any issue. I think Dustin's a top-notch individual that wants to win and wants to be part of winning and wants to find a way to contribute to winning. I think you have to convey that to the player. Contributions to winning come in a lot of different forms and come in a lot of different ways. And sometimes it's as simple as saying, you know, we just want you, it's not that we don't want you to be yourself, but we want you to, you know, be a little bit stronger or pay a little bit more attention in this area because we think that you doing that will benefit the greater whole. And that's part of the sell job. That's part of the task of coaches to say, here's what we need you to do. I always go back and it's, to me, it's one of my favorite quotes from Wayne Gretzky. Wayne Gretzky talked about, you know, Glenn Sather in the playoff, in the regular season, he gave the players a certain creativity, but you know, as different times he would ramp it up and say, listen, we can't be doing this tonight. You got to deal. He said when they were younger, they didn't realize it as much. But as they got older, and then not that old, but they started to win, they realized these are important elements that they have to get into their game. And Wayne used to say, you know, I knew that there was times during the regular season when I could curl inside the blue line, take a risk inside the blue line. But I knew that there was times when we were playing and who we were playing and when the playoffs came that I couldn't make those plays. So, you know, it wasn't that Wayne wasn't a great player. It wasn't that Wayne was not asked to be a contributor. He just realized that for the greater whole of the team, that some of those plays can be made at particular times and situations. I think that's the same case with Dustin Byfuglien.
Craig Button from TSN, a hockey analyst, joining us here on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Jets and Blues tonight on the station at 7 o'clock on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Right before we let you go, Craig, I'm interested to see what kind of a fit you think Curtis Lessard will be in Calgary.
Well, I mean, first thing, Jim, I think that, you know, the Calgary Flames benefit from more speed in the forward group. I think Curtis will provide that. Curtis needs, to call it the reset. He's got certain areas of his game he's got to rehabilitate, and that's not meant in a negative way. I think Curtis can be a really good, solid third-line winger. I don't think he's a center. A centerman needs to distribute the puck, in my view. I think Curtis has speed. He has a tenacity to him. He's competitive. I think he can create chances through the forecheck, and he's in the competitive battles for the puck and along the boards. And, you know, he can take faceoffs as a right-shot guy. I think he's got to find a way to get, like, think of shooting the puck at the net to get pucks directed at the net and to try to have the timing of all that, not to shoot the score. I don't think he's going to be a scorer. I mean, I think he's at his max, maybe he can be a 12 to 15 goal scorer because of those types of elements. But I think that a second round pick, a change of scenery for Curtis can benefit Curtis and the Calgary Flames. And there's work for him to do because, you know, this year has been a disaster for him, but he's got to show that was a one-off, and that'll be up to him and for the Calgary Flames to help him push past that.
Always good talking with you, Craig. Thanks for your time and enjoy your weekend.
Yeah, you too. You guys have a great weekend also.
Thanks so much, Craig. Take care.
Thanks.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, delve back into this Jets-Blues game. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Minutes past the hour on the Big Show on TSN1290, and we want to congratulate Keaton Keaton Kolowenko. That's a good name, man. TSN 1290 Subway Sports Star of the Week. Keaton was nominated by his mom, Amanda. He's 16 years old, and he's been playing hockey for 11 years now. Mom says, "I haven't had a chance to make it to any games this year, sadly, because of my job. I hope he knows how much I wish I could be there. My son is always a star in my eyes. I hope he wins this little treat. I want him to know that I am proud of him, and even though I'm not at his games, my heart is there. He makes me proud. He deserves this. Have a good day." Thanks for the nomination. Keaton is this week's Subway Sports Star of the Week and receives a $50 gift card from Subway. Eat fresh. If you'd like to nominate someone to be our next Subway Sports Star of the Week, tell us about them now at tsn1290.ca. We'll announce the winner next Friday. Congratulations, and that's a great note from Mom.
Attaboy, Keaton, keep kicking butt, man. Awesome stuff.
If you don't know your mom loves you, you do now, because you go get one of those footlongs and everything's all right. Get a couple of them. There, that spells love right there. Back on the Big Show, of course, at TSN 1290, Jim, Troy, and Brandon, and we were talking about the defensive zone coverage at the top of the hour and what the team can do, and how, you know, there is, you know, everybody needs to take control of this on how the Jets play. But Shane, I thought, broke it down well, and we were discussing how, you know, coaches and the players, and it's, to me, about execution. The reason this came up is because they've struggled with it all year. I think they've struggled with defensive zone play for years. But during the NHL Trade Center deadline, Pierre Maguire and Ray Ferraro were asked about what's going on with the Jets and their defensive zone play, and here's what they had to say.
"We're skirting the issue here. Nobody wants to address the elephant in the room. Outside of Colorado, this is the worst structured defensive team in the league. Their defensive zone coverage is atrocious. You don't know what you're getting from night to night. It's not always about the goaltenders. The goaltenders are getting hung out to dry here. You don't know what you're getting night to night from that defense corps. It's simple, rudimentary fundamentals in their own zone. They're not practicing them very well. I know they've had some injuries on defense, but everybody skirts the issue on Winnipeg all the time. It needs to be addressed. They need to be better in their own zone as a group. It's not just a defenseman. It's the entire team concept. And until they buy into it, you're going to have this regardless as to who the goaltender is there."
"Accurate. They don't defend well. They don't kill penalties very well. I mean, their penalty killing's among the worst in the league. And then you get to the goaltenders, who they rolled the dice and went with the two younger guys this year, and they just weren't ready to play. So you've had a really inconsistent year from Dustin Byfuglien. I'm not sure if you know night to night what you get from Byfuglien, and you should know. I mean, I know there's going to be a little bit of swings to his game because he's a bit of an unpredictable player, but he's not had a very good year. Toby Enstrom has had a terrible year. They haven't had Tyler Myers all year. Their defense is not very good. The best story on the Jets' defense is Josh Morrissey. He's had a terrific year for them, but it's not good enough. They don't keep the puck away from the net enough, and they don't stop it when it gets there."
That's Ray Ferraro, and prior to that, Pierre Maguire on TSN's coverage of the Trade Center, with James Duffy, of course, asking the questions. A breakdown there, and I'll go back to Shane Knighty's comments earlier today on the Big Show on TSN 1290. You can see it, and I think they're right in their assessment there. I think goaltending is a bigger problem than Pierre Maguire's saying. I don't want to just put it all on that, but the biggest factor to me is the team's defensive zone play. But to Shane's point, are they close? Do you think they're close? Do you see this sort of coming around with this young team and the core players and everybody? Because to me, that's what I think it is. It's about execution and buying into it as much as you are buying into the offensive side of the game.
It's all about buy-in, right? And attention to detail and a level of consistency. And playing high-level defense is the easiest thing to do. It's way easier than scoring goals, right? So when you're talking about, even as skilled as the Jets are, when you sort of reset and similar to the arrival of Paul Maurice, when this team went into that sort of defensive foxhole, and that's where they'd go to sort of gather themselves in times of adversity, and then they would move on from there. So you protect your house and you move out, and then you start to take advantage of the opportunities that present themselves for goals and that sort of thing. I am blown away that, you know, everybody we talk to, when we're talking and we start and you start breaking things down. So people talk about some of the young forwards and how they need to, this part of their game will get honed and improve as time goes by. Paul Maurice, everyone knows that Ehlers and Laine will get better defensively, all that sort of thing. And when you're talking about an overall buy-in, a level of dedication and consistency, it just, you start to look at specific individuals, defense, we don't ever talk about it with Trouba. We don't ever talk about it, even though he's a rookie with Morrissey. Certain guys are always out there playing the right way. They make mistakes, but they're playing the right way and that sort of thing. This whole thing with Dustin Buffalo, when we talk about it, and I really can't stand harping on it all the time, but when we're talking about the future of this organization and how, like, this is it. Like, going into next season, this is it, right? It is, like, number two or get off the pot here for this situation with the Winnipeg Jets. And if the key that everybody's talking about is a level of consistency, a level of buy-in, all of those things that come into play for this team to take that next step, it's imperative that each one of these guys do that. And when you have someone with such the brilliant level of skill at Dustin Byfuglien, and Craig Button, and everybody says, unmatched. The skill set there is mind-blowing. It's just remarkable. And when you talk about, do we talk about, and he said, well, if you know, you got to talk to him, and the coaching staff has got to do their job and appeal to them, get them to do the right sorts of things. You don't think that they're talking to him like crazy in there? And when you're talking about a soon-to-be 32-year-old man in Dustin Byfuglien, I got to talk to him about the right things to do, right? Really? And so when we talk about great defensemen, some of the upper echelon elite defensemen, Burns, Carlson, Hedman, Keith, Shattenkirk, Yossi, Weber, Doughty, Ekman, Larson, Suter, pick your guy. Do those same conversations need to be had? We have to talk to this guy to get him to play the right way and to dial things in.
Aren't you putting a lot of this on Dustin Byfuglien?
Because he plays such a huge role with this team, JT, is why I do.
But he's one player, and this team struggles for years as a collective defensive zone play.
Okay, and who's this is my ultimate point here. If this team has to take the step to consistently deliver at a higher level all of the important little details to play better defensively, does not the biggest dude and the biggest personality and the leader, the alpha dog in the room, doesn't he have to set the bar there?
Well, he's part of it, but I don't put that much emphasis on him personally. But we'll talk more about it when we come back. We got to take a break and a six-pack coming up on the TSN 1290 Big Show.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a media sponsor of the 2017 Canada Summer Games, as all eyes will be on Winnipeg and Southern Manitoba this summer as thousands of athletes from across Canada come to compete in 16 sports and over 250 events. The 50th anniversary of the Canada Summer Games will welcome over 20,000 visitors, making it an event you won't want to miss. If you want to partake as well as view, volunteer registration is now open. To stay up to date on event details, ticket offers, and more, visit 2017canadagames.ca or tsn1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. Do we have a list too today, or are we just making picks on the six-pack? Last week we did a list.
Yeah, well, we'll see how this thing goes here with the...
Do we want to check the chirping stories again? I got my A.J. Pierzynski chirping story lined up.
Always down with chirping stories.
All right. I just love how prepared this sounds.
Sure, yeah.
This sounds really professional.
Wait a minute, are we on?
What are we doing now? Yeah.
Are we on the air? Oh, a little peek behind the curtain on how the show is produced. Who's supposed to produce it, by the way?
Don't look at me.
Oh, yeah.
I got enough on my plate.
I just thought the person that did it was on holidays for a couple months. But let's get into the six-pack. We have six games in the National Hockey League tonight, so we'll each pick two, making it a six-pack for real. Play that funky music. Turn it up a bit. Get in the groove. Slow slide to the left. Slow slide to the right. I believe I got my game right last week. Did we win last week?
Oh, no. No.
We haven't won yet. Yeah,
we haven't been terrible, but we haven't won yet.
Yeah.
Well, I went 2 weeks in a row. I lost once when Colorado beat Carolina in Carolina. For shame on you, Carolina. You should have taken 2 days and felt shame. Then you get out. But then they won last week. I don't even know who they're playing. I just knew that they traded Ron Hainsey, and the team sort of needed a win, and they got one. So tonight, they host the Arizona Coyotes. I don't know if Burmistrov's going to play or not. For 2 weeks, all I heard about is, look at Burmistrov's on fire! And then last I saw, he had like 7 points in 16 games.
Well, last I saw, he was taken off the ice on a stretcher.
Well, that's what I mean. I don't know if he'll play.
From the hospital. Yeah.
Yeah. But he gave thumbs up. He Instagrammed himself from the hospital. If I get knocked out or injured in any way, the last thing I'm going to do is show you a picture of me in the hospital.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
But anyways, Carolina's hosting the Coyotes tonight. It's paying 165, which is what I made my first 10 years in the media. So let's go with it. You can get a six-pack and pay your rent on that. Not much else. That's all you need. It is a six-pack. Take the Carolina Canes at home against Arizona paying 165. Brandon.
All right. Well, let's head out to number two, Berg. Pittsburgh.
Steel
Penguins.
City.
Oh, good. There's no way I'm picking against the Penguins. The Penguins could be playing us three in the room right now, H&L on defense, and Rick Ralph in goal, and I'd still take TSN 1290 against the Penguins on the road.
But
the Tampa Bay Lightning here. And the reason I'm picking Tampa Bay here is because Peter Budaj is making his first start in net for the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Slovak Cracker Jack, the goaltending messiah. What did the Kings do when they needed a goalie, when Jonathan Quick went down? Apparently you call it Peter Budaj, and he saves the season for L.A. Tampa Bay in the playoff chase. What do they do? Let's bring in Peter Budaj. He's got Ned Flanders on his mask, too. You gotta trust a guy who could somehow find a way to incorporate a Simpsons character into his mask and not look like a total a-hole. So I think Peter Budaj is going to respond big time here at his first start in Pittsburgh. Tampa Bay plays the Penguins pretty well, and let's face it, I just don't like the Penguins. I just don't like them at all. I hate him. I hate him. I hate him a lot. So this might be more heart than head, but that's okay because Tampa Bay, Peter Budaj, with a shutout tonight, are going to find a way to beat the Penguins in regulation, and it's paid pretty handsomely too, 3.25.
You are bold.
Wow.
I'd love to know the last time the Penguins have been shut out at home.
With Budaj.
Peter Budaj.
Peter Budaj probably did it.
Might be known as Peter Redlight tonight.
Woo!
That's a bold call, though, Wicks. I'm down with that. That's cool with me. I'm going to go out to Anaheim. See the Toronto Maple Leafs out there. Blown another third period lead. 9 of them now, I think, in total, huh? And they're saying, hey, man, if they just would have held on for a few of those, they'd be in a playoff spot right now. I like this situation. They've lost 4 in a row. But they're still, I like what Toronto's doing, strolling into Anaheim, Freddie Anderson, ready to go.
Oh, man.
It's going to be a high-scoring game, I think, and I think that they're going to break out of this little bit of a slump that they're in and walk out of Anaheim with a regulation win, and I get 3-0-5 for it, baby. I'm taking the Leafs.
Woo! I don't know, back-to-back? Oh, man. Detroit is in Calgary, rather. I'm flustered. Curtis Lazar will not play for the Calgary Flames. Peter Mrazek is my fantasy goalie, and it has been a struggle. The struggle is real for us. But Calgary's on a heater. Have they won 5 in a row? I think they've won 5 in a row. Calgary is paying 185 at home. Detroit's paying 275. You know how I feel about sister kissers. You're getting kissed, but it's your sister. What's the big deal? I'm going with the sister kisser for the first time this year. It's paying $370. Detroit doesn't have Brendan Smith. Calgary's on a heater, but they're bound to let it down. I've been in Calgary on a Friday night. Nobody's focused. Nobody. Not enough to get a win anyways. You're just there to battle on a Friday night in Cowtown. So I'm taking the tie. $370 between Calgary and Detroit. Brendan.
Well, let's go over to the Windy City and the New York. Wait, hold on. Let me check. The New York Islanders are in a playoff spot? When did this happen?
Yeah.
This is real? 27. All right. Apparently, Doug Waite is a better coach than a lot of us knew, and maybe that was the switch the Islanders needed. Jack Capuano's time was over there on the island, and they're playing good hockey, but they also played last night in Dallas. Watched the game. They were pretty fortunate to skate out of that one with the 2 points, and guess what? They're not playing Antti Niemi tonight. They're going to be getting Corey Crawford in net, and Crawford's nickname is Crow. Now, Jim, can you help? What sound does a crow make?
Oh, it doesn't.
Crow!
I don't know.
Exactly.
I know that they
That's
wake
exactly
me up.
What a crow makes.
I know that outside the condo, there's one in the summer that goes, crow!
That's better.
Crow! Yeah, we birth a dinosaur here.
And I open it, and I look out the window, and I'm like, come on, man. Almost moved.
And doing research on this game, I don't see any bird-related noises I can take out of the Islanders' roster, coaching staff, or management. And so for that reason, and mainly that reason alone, I like Chicago to stay hot here. They're pretty close to Minnesota, too, for tops in the West. I think Chicago grabs a win at home, only 1.5, but apparently, we got enough dough to spread around here because we got a juicy ticket so far.
So you're going Chi-Town.
That's right, baby.
This is the Big Show six-pack on TSN 1290. Mr. Westwood, round us out on this lovely six-pick.
Let's head to the Prairies, boys, for our final pick. Look at the game tonight. Jets, Blues, they're always barn burners, right? They're always tough. They're always tight. Boys, the Jets, they got to respond with a nice defensive game. And you know what? Maybe not a bad time here to be up against St. Louis. They've scored 6 goals in their last 4 games, all of which have been losses. So the Blues are struggling offensively. Maybe the Winnipeg Jets can keep them at bay. You know the Blues are going to come in here under Yo. They're battling for a playoff spot themselves. Expect a real grindy, tough game. Snarly, nasty, tight, and late in the third, and let's hope the both sides hang on. Take it to OT for our pro line. I know it doesn't help the Jets the most.
Another sister kisser.
But let's go to OT and a big payoff at 3.60, baby. We're cashing in a big one.
Two ties.
We're cashing one in tonight.
Two ties. It's insanity here on a Friday. I got Carolina at home paying 165. I got a sister kisser tie between Detroit and Calgary at 370. Brandon.
I like Tampa Bay. Stupid, sexy Peter Budaj making his first start for Tampa Bay. Lightning get the win on the road. And a shutout, too. I'm calling that one. I like Tampa against Pittsburgh and Chi-Town.
Your hatred to the Penguins
is a beautiful thing.
Therapy worthy.
Going with maybe Malkin gets a hat trick tonight.
I go with the Toronto Maple Leafs strolling into Anaheim. Freddie Anderson going to shock the world. And the Leafs walk away with a win. Protect that third period lead tonight. Get 305 for that. And then the Jets and the Blues in a battle. Tie, 3.60. That's a big ticket.
This $5 ticket will pay $1,633.
Holy sons of biscuits.
And 95 cents. Steak sandwiches for everybody if we pull this off. There is your six-pack on the Big Show. TSN 1290 will delve back into the Jets' defensive play and everything else as we tee up the Boss Pizza fan line. Rod Peterson still to come. It is the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Stream us on the iHeartRadio app on all your favorite devices or get a customized playlist to suit your mood or activity. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app today and stream on TSN 1290's The Big Show. Put me on the spot. I don't know what a crow makes. I know it just wakes me up. At some point, I'd like to be known for more than just the animal caller. But if it pays the bills.
It's worst jobs.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. I've done them. I want to remind you that TSN 1290 is taking off on the True North Strong and Free with our Ultimate Canadian Live Sports Tour. Your next chance to qualify is with Mr. Rick Ralph during the Don Vito Roundtable today at 12:15 and then again this afternoon at 5:15 p.m. with Hustler and Lawless. If you do qualify today or any day here on TSN 1290, you will win a pair of Winnipeg Jets tickets simply for qualifying. You can also visit tsn1290.ca for additional chances to qualify, and we have some movie passes there as well to give away, so make sure you do that. We're getting back into our discussion, and we're going to open the Boston Pizza fan line at 9:15 today. Jets and Blues tonight on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day about the defensive zone play on this team. And we had to go to break. You were touching on Dustin Byfuglien. We'll open the phone lines on that as well. And also our conversation that we ran out of time for all the calls yesterday on Kevin Cheveldayoff and his comments about his assessment of the team this year and where they're at. From the trade deadline day on Wednesday. So that's at 9:15 today. We want to make sure if you had an opinion on that, you had time to get in on it. Quickly, my chirping story of A.J. Pierzynski. The year after the White Sox won the World Series against my Astros, I'm an Astros fan, I was down in Kansas City watching some Royals games, and we were third row behind home plate. And actually, that's where some of the scouts sit. So some of the White Sox scouts were there with their World Series rings, and we're talking to them. Our friend of ours that lives down there has season tickets that close and really good tickets.
Just to paint the picture, when you say ours, you're again traveling with us here?
Yes, yes.
Traveling okay, just with to us. Get an understanding so this, of the depth of this. Okay.
This has to be 06 or whatever. And I'm not like a Hustler sports fan who gets into it and yells and screams. I just sort of watch sports and, you know.
Have a wobbly pop.
Yeah,
or two
I have a wobbly pop. I don't
four.
Yell. Yeah. I don't cheer. I don't, you know, I'm pretty
yeah, me too.
Sedated.
I like
but
that.
My buddy that has the tickets, Roger, was saying, well, you're an Astros fan. Here's your chance. Like, because I said all day, I'm like, oh, man, the White Sox. Like, I got to go see them. They just beat the Astros. And so and he's like, so, and I can't stand Pierzynski and his attitude and all this. So we get to the game, and of course, Pierzynski's coming up, and I've had a few. And Roger and Huss are like, well, here's,
liquid
your,
courage,
here's your one chance. And I'm like, well, I'm not in Canada anymore. Whatever. So he's coming up to bat, and I just, like, I'm so uneducated of how to chirp a guy. I'm just like, boo, Pierzynski, boo, boo. And A.J. Pierzynski, being the cocky, arrogant guy he is, gets in the batter's box and gives me a look behind home plate and then just goes up the bat. And I'm like, boo, Pierzynski, boo. Nobody likes you, Pierzynski. I'm gaining some momentum, and the crowd, you know, the crowd's starting to get into it. They're like, yeah, boo, Pierzynski. So I'm getting a little bit more fever here, and I'm like, boo, Pierzynski. So he looks back again after about three pitches and looks at me and gives me the wink, like, hey, buddy. So I'm like, boo, Pierzynski, nobody likes you, not even us in Canada, and Canadians like everybody. So the whole crowd erupts and cheers with that, eh? So he gets a single, goes to first base, whatever. Next time up, same thing. Boo, Pierzynski, boo. Even Canada doesn't like you. Canada's so friendly. They don't even boo your own teammates. Gives me the look again, but steps out a bit. Gets another hit. Comes around to score and gives it to me big time. Like stares at me, gives me the point while he's going to the dugout. And in an instant, I think he went 3 for 4 that night. The whole crowd that in the first two innings were loving me were just like, hey, Canadian, beat it, man. Like, this Shut guy's up. Killing yeah. us right now. So that's my chirping story. If you have one, that'll be on the Boston Pizza fan line as well when we open it here this morning on The Big Show. A.J. Pierzynski stuck it to me with the World Series, and then he stuck it to me again live. That's why I normally just sit and watch at sporting yes. events and don't get too involved in it. If you have a chirping story, by all means, the Boston Pizza fan line will be open on The Big Show, TSN 1290 at 9:15. Back to the Jets in the defensive zone play. Just to thoughts on Byfuglien, I get what you're saying about that, but I think it's more than just him. I understand what you're saying. As the leader, you think he sets the tone to the execution and the buy-in.
Yeah. Yeah, and how do you overcome that? If he's the lead dog out there, how do you overcome his lack of willingness to conform, I suppose, or give you that level of detail that you need. It's just, isn't it remarkable that everybody who talks about it, the situation with the Jets, and then specifically with Dustin Buffalo, talks about speaking to the man and getting that, extracting that out of him. He's turning 32 years old, man. We're not talking about an 18-year-old like a Patrick Laine or a Nikolai, like early in their careers where you set that foundation and come to an understanding. Dustin Byfuglien should be talking to others out there, getting them to play at his level, right? And I know that he's loved in there and all the rest of it, but how can this team as a collective, and I feel like maybe we're talking about this too much, or certainly maybe I'm talking about it too much, but I truly believe this will define the Winnipeg Jets over these next crucial 3 or 4 years. His contract's 4 more years. Look at where these guys are going to be. Laine, Ehlers, Scheifele. Go down the list of the young studs that are up and coming here and the impact that it's going to make. Because so long as his level of play is inconsistent, this team inherently will be that, right? Like, if he can't crank up his game to the level we saw upon the arrival of Paul Maurice, and we, for the next 4 years, talk about trying to appeal to him to play at a more consistent level, this team can't go anywhere until he does, right?
The Big Show, TSN 1290. I understand what you're saying. I just think it's a bigger issue than just... I think Mark Scheifele has to become a better 200-foot player. I think... You know, most
will,
of the forwards do. I think like Patrick Laine and all. Well, I hope he does. I hope he will. But I think that's the overall. And it has been for years. Like, I think for years that has been the issue in their own end. And you know, Craig Button, I thought, made a great point today when he said you have to be able to make a pass. This team, from what I've seen over the years, has historically, from the free pizzas up the middle, Johnny Oduya, to some of the Toby Enstrom, they have a very hard time getting out of their own end.
Well, Enstrom is good with the first pass. I think Morrissey and Trouba are pretty good and consistent with exiting their own zone. That's supposed to be the strength of Postma. You got certain guys, and even like Dustin Byfuglien's real nifty getting out of his own zone. So that's an interesting point to make when at least 5 of the 6 guys, that's probably a strength, like one of their strengths, I think, when people talk about those individuals, that none of them, like Stewie, sort of a different situation. Sherratt struggles as well, but more than not, the Jets D make pretty sound decisions coming out of their own zone with passes.
I think as a whole, we see turnovers from them. The last game was a bad one with turnovers where they couldn't get the puck out of their own. It was embarrassing to a point, but that might have been more to an extreme. I think Buffalo's
and
great.
And their opponent, right? Like, you have opponent, if they're real predictable coming out of their zone, which sometimes it looks like they're way too much like that, Wicks, the good teams snuff them out and don't give the options available for the defenseman to feed the puck to.
Now, I like Buffalo a lot with the puck. And that, wow, Captain Obvious. But a lot of his mistakes, I don't know if you get a lot of mistakes with him with the puck on his stick, right?
Agreed.
He's, you know, for a guy who takes as many risks as he does, very rarely turns it over, very rarely makes a poor pass. He's very responsible in that regard, which is interesting, because without the puck is when we see the mistakes that he makes.
Absolutely.
Right? It's more so his processing of the game.
Yep.
And how do you change that? I mean, at 32, I don't know if you can change that to an extent, right? But I totally get Maurice and Chevy looking at the situation and seeing what Byfuglien can do when he's on, and think if he's on for us and Trouba is playing like Jacob Trouba has this year, like there's arguably no better top two on the right side than Byfuglien and Trouba. Like,
you know,
I
what,
get
though,
that.
Brother, when you sit there and you go, if he's on for us, waiting for that potential can get your coach and GM fired, right? Anytime you're going, if he can, like the whole if and the potential and can he play at, that can get people fired. That's what being a coach killer is, right? When you got the potential to tease people.
I agree with that.
To the unemployment line.
But what coach wouldn't want to have that availability of a dynamic player like that?
Well, brother, you yourself said yesterday, hey, if I'm looking to pick up Dustin Byfuglien, I see all the defensive warts.
Yeah, I do see them. Like, no player is perfect, but I see the defensive warts with Erik Karlsson. along the boards. I'd rather a guy be strong along the boards, but I'd still take Erik Karlsson in a heartbeat.
But my point was you were making yourself the point that an opposing GMs are going to see the weaknesses of Dustin Byfuglien, and do you want to bring that into your organization for 7.6 for the next 4 years? And the level of the battles and the mistakes, you know, everybody's going to lose battles, everyone's going to make mistakes, but there's other things sort of at play here with the level of consistency and the level of bring it night in, night out, right?
If I'm a contending team and I want to shut down defensemen, I don't know if I trade for Dustin Byfuglien. But if I need a dynamic defenseman and points from my blue line, there's no problem with me acquiring him. I'm just saying there are some GMs that would not for sure, but I still think that there are plenty that would take a chance on Dustin Byfuglien, even at 31 years old. We got to take a break, but when we do, we'll come back with Rod Peterson, the voice of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, and then your phone calls at 9:15 on the Boston Pizza Fan Line on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Jim Tilt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, 4 minutes past the hour. Boston Pizza Fan Line on the Big Show, TSN 1290, will be open at 9:15 today. It is a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day as H&L kicks off at 3 o'clock. They'll go till 6 when Rick Ralph and the Manitoba Building Trades Winnipeg Jets pregame show takes over. Paul Edmonds, Brian Munns with the Jets and Blues call at 7. And Rick Ralph and crew will be back with the Huron Windows Winnipeg Jets postgame show immediately after the final whistle on TSN 1290. As I said, phone lines in our next segment, but right now we're very happy to talk with the voice of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders once again, Mr. Rod Peterson. How are you?
Good morning, Jimbo. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, things are well?
Things are great.
Excellent.
Talking CFL in March, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm wondering when Johnny Manziel is going to arrive with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Are you doing the same?
Well, no. You know what? I did not get up this morning and think about Johnny Manziel. I've thought about Vince Young numerous times, and I have actually gone back and forth with the Riders on some of that stuff today. So if you want a recycled NFL quarterback with questionable off-field baggage, Vince Young would be your guy, not Johnny Manziel around here anyways.
Rod, the Vince Young thing, I saw a piece written in Saskatchewan, and it said the Rough Riders don't need something along the lines of not needing an old quarterback. They need a young quarterback sort of thing. Your thoughts on even them contemplating the possibility of Vince Young?
It seems odd to me, for sure. And it, had this been a Jim Pop-managed team, I would have said, oh, this is just a publicity stunt, Troy. But Chris Jones isn't in this for the publicity at all. He is in it to win, however. And look, you know what it's like in our role as voice of the team. You got to kind of go and support with what the team's doing. So if Chris Jones feels that Vince Young is a guy that can lead this team to prominence, to a Grey Cup, we got to kind of believe in the guy. It sounds odd. I've got friends in Austin, Texas who know Vince Young. He's telling people that he will be quarterbacking the Rough Riders in 2017. So when we first heard that he'd been added to the Riders' neg list a month ago now, we didn't even know whether to believe it or not. But now I've had his agent, Lee Steinberg, on the air, Vince Young saying these things. The Riders, by the way, have yet to confirm anything. Chris Jones says he will not talk about rumors regarding negotiations. So the team hasn't even confirmed that Vince Young might be up here, but Vince Young's saying a lot.
You know, and I guess the discussion, Rod, and Rod Peterson, voice of the Riders, are joining us this morning on the Big Show, TSN 1290, is just the quarterback situation. And so where do you think this goes for the Riders once camp opens? Who do you think will be there vying for the starting quarterback job along with Kevin Glenn?
Well, you know what? It's going to start in Florida in April. When the Riders have their camp at Vero Beach. That's where I think we'll get a look at Vince Young and just see what kind of shape he's in. You know that he can make all the throws on a CFL field, but that's one of the things that was his hallmark was his arm. We'll see how he fares in Florida. Last year at Dodger Town, where the Riders had their camp, they had 10 quarterbacks. Included in that was Dan Lefevre, by the way, who the Riders had a look at and elected not to sign. And some other guys were there, like B.J. Coleman, who the team would eventually bring to training camp. There'll be a lot of quarterbacks there, I expect, including Vince Young. And then once they get to Saskatoon for training camp on that last weekend of May, who knows? It'll be an open competition. Don't forget, it includes Kevin Glenn. Brandon Bridge is in that camp. And then a couple of young guys, G.J. Kinney and Jake Waters, who were rookies in the CFL last year. There's a lot of guys. It's not a situation, though, like Ottawa, where you've got Trevor Harris and Drew Tate. And Rick Campbell has said, hey, you got to have two quarterbacks in this league to win. That's why we went out and got Drew Tate. The Riders don't have one proven CFL winner at quarterback, let alone two right now. And that's what's got fans really worried.
Rod, how excited are you to see when this young man was in Winnipeg, he was young, and then he goes down for tries to get into the NFL, and when he came back up into Canada, his body to me looked different. Like the neck, the traps, the shoulders were just ridiculous. 6 feet, 230, Enoch Mwamba, what he might accomplish this year is going to be something special.
What he accomplished last year, Troy, in the final third of his season, like, when a guy's not on your team, you don't notice everything that he does. When he was, you know, having all-star seasons and top Canadian seasons in Winnipeg, I thought, oh, okay, he's a name. But when I saw him play in, play out in practice and then in the games with the Rough Riders last year, he was a game changer. And that's obviously not a surprise to you at all. But there was a game in Toronto where Enoch Mwamba, you know, laid the wood on the ball carrier for the Argos, forced a fumble. It was one of the hardest hits I'd seen all year. Completely changed the complexion of the game. Enoch Mwamba is that. So I didn't even see him physically until he showed up in Saskatchewan. I don't know what he was like in Winnipeg or what he was like at St. FX. He's a brick wall and apparently a very smart guy. I've had, you know, just a few occasions to talk to the guy. He is the anchor of the defense. So while everybody's talking about the quarterback around here, it's a very astute observation by you, Troy. There's a lot of other signings near the end of last year and then some here in free agency that hopefully will all support the quarterback position.
Rod Peterson, the voice of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, joining us today on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Blues tonight on TSN 1290, 7 o'clock is puck drop. Keenan LaFrance is such an interesting story because I remember when he couldn't even get a starting job, and it wasn't because of his talent on the Bisons here with the U of M. It was because of the depth they had until his last year. Then he sort of gets drafted in the sixth round, goes to Ottawa, makes the most of an opportunity, but I never saw him parlaying it into starter's money as a contract. It's a great story, Rod. Can he be the starter in Saskatchewan this year?
Well, that's why he signed in Saskatchewan, Jim, so we'll see. He's going to be given that opportunity. Like, for the last couple of years when I was filling out my depth chart for games between Ottawa and Saskatchewan, I saw this Keenan LaFrance, Manitoba. I thought, oh, here's another Canadian fullback. The world's full of those. Great guys. We need him. And then he, you know, has his coming out party in the East Final last year against Edmonton in the snow game, completely leveraged his own situation into free agency. Everybody thought he was going to Winnipeg. Everybody but the Rough Riders, who not only, I guess, made him an attractive offer financially, but gave him that opportunity to start. We had him on the show the week after free agency on my program, and he feels that he can be the next Andrew Harris, the next, any great Canadian tailback in the CFL, maybe even Sean Millington, to be honest with you, although he's not as big. But he's going to have the opportunity. The Riders want to flip the ratio at the tailback spot, and Keenan LaFrance goes into camp as the number one guy in the depth chart. I think everybody around here is pretty excited about that. But it was a shock because we thought he was going to go to the blue and gold too and be the, you know, the all-Manitoba backfield there with the Bombers.
Rod, when I look at the West, Calgary is going to be Calgary. I think BC is going to be downright scary with that offense. Jonathan Jennings another year. I think BC has a chance to win the West. And then I think we're going to see Winnipeg, Edmonton, and Saskatchewan in some free-for-all battling for 3, 4, 5 spots going forward. People are really excited here in Winnipeg, and I think almost carelessly so, about being overly optimistic about what the Bombers might accomplish this year. What, as far as the fan base goes in Saskatchewan, how patient are they going to be here with Chris Jones?
Well, you know what, for one, as far as the Bombers go, because I watched them almost as closely as my own team here, because of the guys running the outfit, guys that I respect, LaPolice, O'Shea, Richie Hall, that whole crew, Weston Dressler, your fans should be excited. It was a pretty big leak, Troy. Don't forget, 4-win improvement, a playoff spot. I was just talking to somebody the other day from Winnipeg that they think that a Grey Cup appearance this year is not something they should shy away from. Everything's good in Bomberville. Here in Saskatchewan, although they are expected to take a leap forward, look where we've been. 3 wins 2 years ago to 5 wins last year. And you just look at that West Division that you just said, where are you going to get a leg up in that group? Sure, you can beat up on East Division teams. Everybody in the West is going to do that. It's going to be real tough for the Rough Riders to leapfrog anybody into a playoff spot. Now, we're all planning that Chris Jones has something up his sleeve. That's why he was given the rich contract that he was. He's trying to do some salary cap stuff here and stabilize things to a way that hasn't been done since the Eric Tillman days around here, which actually were pretty successful. But you know what? I will never, Troy and Jim, make a prediction on the standings at all going into the spring, because I've done it twice in my career and both times received death threats from fans around Western Canada. So don't ask me where the Riders will finish. If I said fifth, I might get them from our own fans, which has happened. So it's going to be a lot of fun. It's 2-5-3 months till training camp. That's absolutely painful.
All the plans probably aren't finalized, but I would imagine that's going to be a big opening of the new stadium when it does happen.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous. Right now, it would be easier to get into the Oval Office than it is to get into Mosaic Stadium right now. I'm hoping when CFL week comes up here in a couple of weeks, the Riders will be given tours of the new stadium and so forth. But right now, there's 3 floors of team facilities that you got to go up and forth, up and down through an elevator. I've never seen anything like it. And the coaches walk around with their jaws on the ground. Like, this is the nicest thing I've ever seen. And I'm fine with, Bob Irving saying the Bombers have the nicest stadium. We say we have the nicest stadium. I remember arguing with Knuckles over who had the worst stadium five, six years ago. So I like this argument a lot better.
Hey, I want to ask you a question here. I think the Bomber fans in general, if there's an area of concern that would occupy the minds of the most Bomber fans, it would be the defense. And last year in watching the defense, teams would march up and down the field in between the 20s for sure, and then the Bomber defense created its fair share of turnovers, but we all know that's not something you can really bank on. It's not something that's really sustainable. Your opinion with Richie Hall, Rod, is he not aggressive enough in disrupting opposing quarterbacks with blitz packages and such? Is that a knock on Richie Hall?
Yeah, it was here forever. But overall, if you look at Richie's numbers on a defense, it's a successful defense. He doesn't put a lot of it's not a pressure defense, obviously. It's a bend-but-don't-break defense, and he needs the personnel suited for his philosophy. But overall, it will work. Richie's defense is a defense that will win you games. Not, you talked about taking the ball away. They were taking it away at a record-breaking pace. Did they not end up setting a record last year for takeaways or differential?
They may have, my friend, but boy, they surrendered the most yards through the air, and like their average per game was horrible as well. Like as far as
not as big on yards. He's big on points. That's it, and not giving up. He's okay with giving up field goals, not touchdowns. I don't think it was the defense in the playoffs at BC that cost the Blue Bombers the win that day. I think there was some turnovers early. Try to remember. I spend more time analyzing our own team than the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. But I think Richie Hall's defense over a body of work, Troy, has been successful and will be successful in Winnipeg.
RodPeterson.com and on Twitter, @RodPeterson. He is the voice of the Rough Riders in Saskatchewan. Always a pleasure, my friend. Good talking with you. And we'll, I'm sure, as the season draws closer, be doing it again.
Thanks, fellas. Have a good weekend.
Thanks so much, brother. Take care.
A Boston Pizza fan line on the big show, TSN 1290, is now open, 780-1290. Your thoughts on Kevin Cheveldayoff's comments about the team and where they're at for the Winnipeg Jets. Your thoughts on tonight's game, the Jets and the Blues. And, of course, if you have a chirping story, we'll hear that too. And the defensive zone play is what we were talking about. How would you fix that? Do you blame coaching? Do you think it's execution of players? Anything and everything on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day, 780-1290 next on on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
.780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290. The Boston Pizza fan line wide open on a Jets-Blues game day. Puck drops at 7, full pre- and post-game coverage as well. Jim Toth, Trey Wessler, Brandon Ruwicki with you. As we're talking Jets defensive zone play, Kevin Cheveldayoff's comments. I know we ran out of time. We had some people waiting on the line at the end of yesterday's show, so we want to make sure everybody gets their opinions on where he thinks the team is at and what you think he needs to do or should be doing this summer after the trade deadline. Al, you're kicking us off today on The Big Show. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good, thanks. You?
Actually, I wanted to comment on the goaltending.
Sure.
If that's okay.
Oh, yeah. Anything and everything.
I guess the Jets and the Moose together combined, they've got, what, five goaltenders now? Three and two?
The Jets, yeah, they have three up right now, I presume, because Andre Pavlik's going to be activated off the IR, and then they have Jamie Phillips and Eric Comrie in the minors with the Moose.
Yeah, and so what I can see, I used to play goal, and I can see a lot of common traits here between all the goaltenders. Is number one is none of them can focus for a full 60 minutes of a game. And they all let in soft goals.
Okay.
And one of the biggest common traits here is that they all have the same goaltending coach. And you guys never, ever talk about the goaltending coach.
Well, we talk about him all the time, Al.
That should get fired.
Go ahead.
I say this is the guy that should get fired as the goaltending coach.
We've actually, Al, talked about it a lot on the show. We get a lot of calls like yours. We've actually even had Jamie McClellan on from TSN to talk about goaltending coaches and what their jobs are because we do talk about it all the time. I just don't put the emphasis. We hear the same thing about Charlie Huddy on the show. Like, Al, you tell me you used to play goal. What is a goaltending coach's job? Oh.
Of course, just to allow and to nurture the development of the goaltenders, keep them sharp.
Like, I don't...
Like, focus. A focus problem wouldn't, for Pete's sake, why didn't people call into the call-in shows when I was a kicker and rail on my coach for not making sure that I was more focused? Like, what is that, man? That's up on the goalie. A goaltending coach, you can, you know, talk to your guy about being more focused, all the rest of it. But the soft goals, you think that's the goaltending coach's problem for real? And you want to try and compare, for instance, stylistically, Connor Hellebuck to Andre Pavlik? They're totally different. And you can't be hacking on Eric Comrie. Well, how much have you seen him play very much? You're telling me that he's having a disappointing season even? He's a young goaltender, but he's a guy that's playing at a real nice level, and people are really inspired by the promise that he might bring to the table.
Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not opposed to any coach, whether it's the goaltending coach or the head coach, being fired. And it happens all the time. I don't...
And it's Rick St. Croix anyway with the Moose, right? So you're talking two different coaches.
Well, Wade Flaherty works with both of them, but I know Rick St. Croix has been down there for a while and doing work with them. So I appreciate the sentiment, Al. We do talk about it a lot, though, actually, just simply because a lot of people feel the way you do. I think along with everybody else, you need to be evaluated. I think you put too much emphasis on the goaltending coach when it comes to poor play from the goaltender.
The athletes own their work, own their body of work.
But we appreciate the opinion and take more of them on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Who's next?
Darren.
Darren, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. How are you?
Good. Love your show, although sometimes, Troy, you make me shake my head with your comments, but I still love you guys.
Thanks for listening, man.
Listen, you know what? I think we just need to be patient with the team, period. I mean, I heard what Lawless said on Hustle and Lawless, and it's like how the team's growing and how, you know, the changing the arena and the MTS Center. We just have to be patient as a fans. I see great progress with the team. I mean, granted, I think we need to get rid of Stewart and Postma, but I think we just need to be patient. Everyone has to be patient with the team, period. That's all I can say. I think they're doing well, and I think we'll make the playoffs next year.
Yeah, Darren, and I agree. Like, a lot of people think that 6 years is enough patience. I don't. I think that it takes as long as it takes. I look at this roster, and this is what I said yesterday about Kevin Cheveldayoff's job. I finally think he has some assets to go and fix some things that the team needs. I don't think even 2 years ago when they went to the like this team is not going to the playoffs this year, in my opinion. I think they're a better team than was the team 2 years ago that went to the playoffs. They need to work on some things. The coaching needs to be better when it comes to defensive zone play, and the players' execution needs to be better. But I'm not at a point where I don't think that this is – I know we had a call yesterday or a couple days ago that everything's a mess and all. I understand some patience for some fans is running out, and I understand why it's running out. I just don't see it that way.
And I don't think you can say it takes as long as it takes, though, because then you'd be saying that at 10 years or whatever. Right now is the first time organizationally, though, where I think you can look at it objectively and say this team is two or three pieces away from having a level of depth that should allow and propel them to be able to reach their potential and settle in above the playoff line somewhere. I think for the first time, 6 years deep, with what they've drafted and how those individuals are now making positive impact on this team, I think the team has arrived in that manner for next year.
Patience is such a key word. With your fans are either saying have more of it or fans are either saying I'm out of it. So what are you saying? We'll listen to your comments on the Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, when we come back to The Big Show.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Boston Pizza Fan Line on The Big Show, TSN 1290 at 780-1290 on a Jets-Blues game day. Jim Toth, Brandon Ruwicki, and Troy Westwood.
So this morning there's a tweet from John Torrey, former CFL commissioner. And it's a piece that he has, is Toronto the next great North American sports city? And John Torrey's tweet reads, I'm confident the championships are coming at Maple Leafs, at Blue Jays, at Raptors, at Toronto FC, at Toronto Rock, LAX, lacrosse.
Ooh.
Former CFL commissioner Napah D'Argo is in there. What in the world?
It's the Toronto Rock that's the kicker, right? You found time to put the lacrosse team in there.
You're the former CFL commissioner, man. What? Come on, man.
Maybe he's jonesing for an NLL commissioner gig.
What is wrong with
maybe he wants a commissioner gig of the world of sports. I want to be the commissioner of the world of sports. Boston Pizza Fan Line once again, 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290. Milo, you're on the program. Go ahead. Hi, Milo.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I've been waiting for 2.5 hours to say, you know what, please stop thrashing on Thorburn, please, okay? We need him in the lineup tonight, period. We got Reeves running around, okay? We don't need any more traumatic injuries to our high-skilled players, okay?
Fair enough.
And you think that's going to scare Reeves to not crush Enstrom when he goes in to retrieve pucks?
It's not going to scare him, but it's at least going to who else is going to cushion that threat?
Dustin Byfuglien?
Well, you know, Dustin Byfuglien can't play on it, you know, every pairing.
Well, Thorburn's only going to be on the ice for 6 minutes, probably.
I say 7.5. Okay.
Okay.
Hey boys, have a good weekend. Take care,
appreciate the call, Milo. Appreciate you listening. Appreciate you waiting to get through on the Boston Pizza Super Fan Line. 780-1290. Greg, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Morning, guys. How's it going?
Good,
love
thanks.
The show. Listen every day. So, I too was a goalie long time ago. I didn't get drafted or anything, but I played in the MJHL. And so, in the late 60s, early 70s, into the mid 70s, and I never had a goalie coach. There was no such thing back then. You picked a goalie that you tried to emulate, and in my case, it was Glenn Hall, and I can't tell you the number of times that I was told by a coach, you're never going to make it, Greg. You got to get up off the ice.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
If you look at any analytics on goaltenders, 95%+ of what of when they make a save, they're on their knees. That's what's taught today. That's how they take away those guys with the great shots. They're bigger goalies than we were. They wear bigger equipment. The pads are so much lighter. They can get it up and down quicker. So for these guys that are railing on Wade Flaherty about why our goalies aren't stopping the puck, just look at the quality of shots. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, I'm in the camp that quality of shots this team has given up is a big, and I believe there was a time, I forget when it was, Elliot Friedman did the work on this, but it was it 2 months ago where he had the, oh, it was when Columbus came to town, and he put the save percentages and the goals against up from the danger zone compared to Bobrovsky to Connor Hellebuck. And I think Connor Hellebuck was in the 700s for save percentage, and Bobrovsky was in, you know, what his numbers are around. And that is part and parcel. That is goaltending, but it's also defensive zone play. It's team play when you're giving up those quality shots from the danger zones. And that was a real – because Connor Hellebuck had really good numbers 5-on-5, but – on the danger zone shots 5-on-5, they weren't good numbers. And
the
I would
high
presume,
danger you're talking
yeah,
about.
And I would presume they were the same for all the goaltenders on this team.
But interestingly, like if you search and you know, for goalies that have played 1,500 or plus minutes for high danger shots against, which is the zone you guys are talking about, Connor Hellebuck, I believe, is 15th for the number of shots faced in the high danger shots against. So there's all kinds of breakdowns that happen. You know, the goaltender, you got to save him. I know that Connor Hellebuck's save percentage against high danger shots is really bad. So that he's, you know, there are breakdowns, but you have to be able to respond and you have to make the odd save like that.
Appreciate the call, Greg, on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290 on the Big Show here on TSN 1290. Jim Tolt, Troy Wessler, Brandon Rewicki with you, and Ron, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Okay, so I have a friend of mine who calls me on a regular basis and talks about goaltending and coaching, and not necessarily Wade Flaherty, talking about the head coach and the mediocrity of the team, and you know, he asks me, are you okay with that? Well, I realize that we're in a situation where the things aren't going as well as I thought they would go. I thought they would be better. I think the only mistake that Cheveldayoff made was starting two younger goalies that didn't have a lot of experience, and I'd like to see them shore up that goaltending, as in I still like to see Hellebuck get a majority of the starts and have a veteran tender to be there for him and whenever he needed it. And so two questions. I'm not sure who's going to be out there. I know Ron Darling's one that could be a possibility, and they just Philly just signed Neuwirth. I don't know what's going on with Steve Mason. What type of, like, what do you guys see out there that might be a good fit for the Jets? And as for Paul Maurice, I know that things haven't gone as well as they should. We had the schedule we started off with at the beginning of the year, the injuries and the young guys coming in. So a combination of all that, and it was the perfect storm, I guess you could say, that we are where we are right now because of that. But I think that there's better things to come for this team. We got so much youth on this team that is got a lot of talent. Roslovic, Connor in getting a lot of time there. I'm still optimistic, and I'm a passionate fan. And I hate when we lose, but at the same time, I'm being realistic, and I still feel that we're going in the right direction. But as for the goaltending and the coaching, I want to know what your guys' thoughts are on that. You guys take care and have a great weekend.
Thanks, Ron.
Hey, these are the upcoming UFAs, okay? So Bernier in Anaheim, Elliott and Johnson in Calgary, Scott Darling in Chicago, Budai in Tampa Bay now, Kemper in Minnesota, Mason in Philly, McElhinney in Toronto, and Miller in Vancouver. Those are the upcoming UFAs.
Yeah, McElhinney, I don't put much. I wouldn't go after him. I just think there's a handful of five or six of that list. And then also I think there's some trades you can make. Like I said, I think that 2-3 years ago, everybody wanted some trades into being made. And I don't know other GMs that were looking at the Jets other than a Wheeler or a Little or maybe even a Ladd going, you know, I want this, I want that. So I think now that there's not enough room for all the assets on this lineup heading into next year and the year after that. And I think it's time to sort of figure out what you want, who you want, and if it's free agency or if it's via a trade, you start improving this team with some of the assets that you've accumulated and built up. I think that's what the process has been. I've been on record at saying your chance of getting free agents to come to a team that's non-playoffs in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada aren't good. I think that your hands are tied and you have to draft, develop, get some skill, get some assets. And, I mean, Matthew Perreault signed here as a free agent. There's a couple of really good hockey players on this team that re-upped here to sign. But Matthew Perreault came for money and opportunity. And he's gotten that.
Yeah, no matter what, no matter how, and we are talking about it. And I don't know, are there any Jets fans out there thinking that the expectation level isn't playoffs or bust for next year? You absolutely have to solve that position behind, assuming it's Connor Hellebuck, you have to solidify that position behind him next year.
And the closer we get to free agency, the more I'm down to be the conductor of the Scott Darling to Winnipeg train.
I'm right there with you.
I love his game. Yeah, I love watching him play. And he's been nothing but spectacular for 2 years in a row now. And there's a lot of Chicago people that don't want him to go because he's been basically neck and neck with Corey Crawford over the past two seasons. He's been fantastic. And I like having two big goalies like that. I like when you have to play Winnipeg, it's the big goalie team.
So there's a number of options out there, but I think this season comes down to execution. And it's just, I think the philosophy from what I've seen from the Jets is to allow the skill and the talent some freedom. And I think it's cost them. And they have to commit to that 200-foot game. We've seen Scheifele develop. We've seen Ehlers develop. Guys like that. They have to develop into solid 200-foot players. The defense has to be better. But you sit here as a general manager, I would think, and this is a big offseason. This is a summer where you can finally probably put some assets on the table that other people want. And we heard that at the trade deadline when they were getting calls. It was for some of the assets that they have, and they wanted to give back assets or draft picks. Well, the Jets don't need more of those. The Jets need some players that can come in and play, and I think it starts on defense and a solid, experienced veteran goaltender to not only help Connor Hellebuck, but push Connor Hellebuck and get this team some wins that they weren't getting in net this year. That's my opinion. We'll take more of your calls on the Boston Pizza fan line when we come back on the Big Show, TSN 1290. It's a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Blues tonight at 7 on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Blues tonight, 7 o'clock on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca as well. The fan line, 780-1290. Johnny, you're on with Jim, Troy, and Darren. Brandon.
How's it going, guys?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Sorry, Brandon.
You taking my call.
No problem.
A couple of points that I have here. Number one, you know, everybody's doing a little bashing of both Maurice and Buff, and I want to address both of them. Firstly, starting with Maurice, regardless of where their record is right now, if you equate into the scenario Trouba signing right at the beginning of the year and not having the injuries that we obviously had, all of these variables equal at least four or five extra wins for our team throughout the season. That extra 8 or 10 points puts us in a playoff spot, and if that was the case, everybody, there wouldn't be one person in Winnipeg that would want Maurice to be fired. So from that standpoint, I'm in defense of Maurice. Secondly, when it comes to Buffett, you know, I find it incredibly ironic that it's not even a year after we signed him to this deal, where everybody in Winnipeg was basically having a parade that we signed him, and we're all excited about, yeah, we get Buff for another 5 years, and not even one season in, you know, the talk is about trading him. All at the same time when Hockey News is putting out an article about how Buff is worth every penny of the deal that he ended up signing. I think that we in Winnipeg have a tendency to not give our own the love and respect that we sometimes think that we should give to other guys who aren't on our team. I don't know. To me, both of these guys are keepers. They both want to be here. They're both big parts of our team, both present and future. And that's my thoughts. Just thought that I'd drop that in. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, we appreciate the call, John. And I read the article from the Hockey News, and it was mostly based on offensive numbers and ice time. I agree. I wouldn't trade Dustin Byfuglien. I just wouldn't right now. But I do think that he needs to play better. Or I think he's had a bad year. I think he's had an off year this year. He hasn't played up to his potential.
The Hockey News piece was absolute malarkey, talking about Norris Trophy stuff with Dustin Byfuglien. It was just, I can't remember the author's name with the Hockey News, but being real frank, I thought it was just out to lunch.
Thanks for the call, John. 780-1290 on the big show, TSN 1290. Patrick, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I just had a couple things to say. First of all, I got to say I feel bad for you guys because Jets fans are probably some of the most like bipolar fans in the league. I remember at the start of the year, everyone I talked to and like everyone on TSN would say, oh, yeah, the Jets aren't going to make the playoffs this year. And I agree. And now that they're not going to make the playoffs, everyone's freaking out, and I just find it funny. Secondly, I was just wondering, do we have to protect Josh Morrissey from Vegas?
No.
No? Well, I was just wondering, why don't we – I know Kevin Cheveldayoff will never do this, but we should not protect Byfuglien because, first of all, one of two things will happen. One, Vegas will take him, and then we get – and then they take his $8 million contract.
Oh, first of all, Patrick, sorry to cut you off, but they have to protect him. He has a full no move.
Oh, I thought he didn't have the no move until 4 years or so.
I don't think so. I looked it up, and I believe the two players they have to protect are Byfuglien and Enstrom because they have full no move clauses.
Yeah, Byfuglien has starting in 18-19, he's got a 14 no trade list that he can submit.
I didn't mean to
cut your idea off, but they do have to regardless, so.
Okay. Well, that's all right then. Yeah. Well, I guess that point shot then.
But there is a lot of train of thought. If you could leave Enstrom and Byfuglien unprotected, whether they would take them or not, and I think they would because I don't know the quality of defensemen that, like Byfuglien and Enstrom, regardless of what you think of them, are top four guys, especially on an expansion team to me. So you're going to take them, and then a lot of people say the money. You know, Vegas needs to get to the floor. They're going to have a hard time reaching the floor in the cap room. So I think they would love to not only get a top four defenseman, but one that would eat up $6 to $8 million.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say is that if they were to take Byfuglien, then you know we clear up $8 million, and then we can use that towards a goalie or new defensemen or whatever. Or if they don't take him, then we didn't have to protect him, and we could protect a forward instead, right?
Yeah.
And lastly, Troy, is Tim Westwood your brother?
My uncle.
He's your uncle?
Yeah.
Well, he's got a social ticket for my wedding social. I was wondering if you were going to go.
I'll talk to him about it. I'll see him at hockey on Sunday morning. I'll talk to him about it, man. Take care.
Thanks, Patrick.
Good luck with the social.
Thanks, Patrick. If I ever have a social, you can't come to it.
I might streak at your social.
Mike, you're on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good, thanks.
I guess it's more a comment. There's only three ways for this team to play better defensively. One is the players have to buy in, which they quite haven't done it yet. Cheveldayoff has to make a top trade, trading one of our veteran players to get a 3-4 defenseman, or the coach has to go. Who would you trade if you were going to make a trade?
Well, like I mean, the young players, I like all of them. I think that's all. But that's what you have to give up something to get something. And I look at, you know, the Edmonton Oilers and some of the other trades that have gone on, and you have to probably in this day and age with the cap and address your needs, pay more than you're going to get back, but you address the biggest need that you have. So I would think that some prospects, some picks, and a veteran player or two, and I don't know if somebody wants Matthew Perreault, if somebody wants, you know, any one of those guys. I don't want to say, like, I mean, there's Kopp, there's Patan, there's Roslovic.
Well, I think you almost have to trade a veteran player because
I agree with that.
This group of people you have on the ice can't play defensive hockey. They don't know how to play defensive end hockey. So you put these people on the ice, you have to trade somebody of them and maybe throw a pick in to get somebody, or you have to let the coach go. Those are the only two options because the team hasn't bought in.
Yeah, if you could package up one of the – I wouldn't touch Morrissey or Trouba. I would leave Byfuglien. If you could package up Enstrom and maybe – or a Myers, I wouldn't send both of them out, and then add in a prospect and maybe a draft pick and get a solid top four guy back, I would do that.
I think that if you believe in what you just said, Mike
– yeah.
Then and the last thing you said was because they're not buying in. That's everything. What you're saying right there.
Yeah, the two things. I mean, when you look at what Bruce Boudreau did with the Minnesota Wild, a coaching change would probably be the easiest way to have the biggest impact immediately. But you have to find a coach of Bruce Boudreau's impact, and I don't know if that guy is going to be out there.
Ken Hitchcock,
potentially. I have a little bit of hesitancy of going with Ken Hitchcock. But, you know, the St. Louis Blues a few years ago traded TJ Oshie to Washington and kind of a player for, I believe it was with Troy Brouwer. And it wasn't because TJ Oshie was a bad player. It was just they almost had to make a trade just to change the complexion of their team a little bit. You know what I mean? And I think that might be a move that the Jets could look at where you don't necessarily make a trade just to get lesser talent in, but you almost just to have a different voice and a different face in there because the group has, there's a lot of the players that have, you know, even we talk about the Atlanta Corps all the time, right? Like moving one of those guys in just to shake things up. I could see that if you're going talent for talent pretty evenly.
Yeah.
We all know where I'd go with that, right? Like,
thanks for the, yeah, Des, you'd like to ship Buffalo out and get something.
Yep.
Barry is our last. Oh, we've got no time. Sorry, Barry, and everybody else on the fan line. We'll have it open again on Monday. We've got to go, but it is a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. H&L live at 3 o'clock till 6. Rick Ralph is in with the pregame, and then the puck drop at 7 with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns, Jets and Blues, and then of course Rick Ralph's back with the postgame. We'll take a break, and Rick Ralph's up with your lineup at 11 a.m. on the Don Vito Roundtable. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be back Monday morning at 6. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, thank you for listening. And the Big Show is back Monday at 6 on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.